done in their prime. May not show when you look at me, but I know I'm in mine now. Rest your head on this bed of mother's pride and find out why. Don't you wanna take me home? Don't you wanna take me home? Give me a sense of purpose, a real sense of purpose now. Give me a sense of purpose, a real sense of purpose now.
Over the mountain, down in the valley, lives a former talk show host. Everybody knows.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Today marks the debut of a California-wide ad blitz targeting Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's proposed healthcare industry changes. The governor has been in a heated battle with the California Nurses Association ever since he announced changes to staffing rules. Schwarzenegger used emergency action to freeze scheduled changes in nurse staffing ratios that would have assigned fewer patients per nurse. The 60,000-member union says that the changes will be harmful to patients. The ad will debut tonight in every major California cable market during a movie about Schwarzenegger's life.
The Kansas Association of Public Employees says Democratic Governor Kathleen Sebelius is allowing illegal anti-union activities against state employees. Betty Vines heads the employee association. She says her union has filed two formal complaints with the state labor board in Kansas in an effort to halt what she calls management intimidation tactics against the union.
I think it's kind of ironic that we're willing to send people all over the world to fight for other people's rights, and yet we constantly, from national on down, see our citizens being denied rights that should come to them easily, you know, and that they have to have somebody, a union or association, to be there to fight for them daily to make sure that they aren't denied those rights.
Vines says her union won't tolerate intimidation and interference from the state when it comes to the labor rights of state workers.
As garbage workers rallied in Hamilton Township, New Jersey yesterday, their company prepared to start hiring permanent replacement workers. Workers represented by the Teamsters have been striking against Waste Management Incorporated for 22 days, with no date set to resume contract negotiations. The company warned strikers last week that if they didn't accept the company's latest offer, they would face the possibility of being replaced. This week, the company began collecting job applications for permanent replacement workers. Teamsters officials say that because the strike is an unfair labor practices action, the workers are protected from being replaced. The National Labor Relations Board has not yet classified the strike. If the NLRB rules it economic, the workers could be replaced. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Alabama saw a growth spurt in union membership during 2004. Government figures show that 9.7% of Alabama workers belonged to a union in 2004, up from 8.1% in 2003. Nationally, there has been a decline in union membership from 12.9% in 2003 to 12.5% last year. Many states, especially in the South, have seen organizing decrease as plants close and jobs go overseas.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Oh, cruel fate. Have pity on the poor CEOs of corporate world. One day they're strutting peacocks. The next day, they're feather dusters. Several CEOs who've recently had their plumage plucked are in the news again, this time facing trial for various levels of fraud. Kenneth Lay of Enron, Dennis Kozlowski of Tyco, Bernie Ebers of WorldCom, Richard Scrushy of HealthSouth, and Walter Forbes of CUC International are among the former CEOs who once were heralded in business magazines, management books, and the popular media as giants, geniuses, and gurus, the gods of corporate success. Only a couple of years ago, these gentlemen of the executive suite were giving lectures on how to run a modern corporation. Now, they're in the dock. Not only have these gods tumbled from the heights, but their legal defense is that they were never really in charge of their corporations and knew nothing about the multi-billion-dollar heist taking place on their watch. It's the dummy defense. Lay, for example, now says that, golly, while he once took credit for Enron's success, he really can't be responsible for its collapse since he wasn't involved in the details of corporate management. Likewise, Walter Forbes says he was uninvolved in CUC's day-to-day operations because, as CEO, he had his head in the clouds, focusing on, quote, the strategy vision part. The same with Ebers. WorldCom's hotshot chief asserts that he knew nothing about the $11 billion insider fraud that devoured his company, for he left all the arithmetic to his financial people. Even though he has previously claimed credit for being a hands-on financial detail man who made WorldCom a success. This is Jim Hightower saying, odd that these guys who raked in the big bucks for being in charge now claim to have been management dummies and victims of conniving underlings. Odder yet, not one of them offers to give back the loot they took.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Happy Friday. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live from Palm Springs, California, where I'm speaking this weekend at the Winter Brain Conference, a conference on neurology and brain function combined with StoryCon, eclectically put on by Rob Qual, a fellow who is not only into psychology but into fiction, and so there's some of the world's finest fiction writers here. In fact, I'm giving a speech as soon as we get off the air today, 15 minutes after I get off the air, doing a one-hour presentation to a couple thousand people on the effects of story on culture. So it's going to be an interesting day and a wild weekend. Anyhow, welcome back to our program, and hopefully we can pull this thing off for the next 3 hours solid, coming in over this the miracles of modern technology, this Comrex via telephone line from hotel to back to Vermont, where Rama is mixing this thing so brilliantly, Rama Schneider and Ira Gravatt, and then they're beaming it out to Colorado, where it's going up on the Jones satellite and the ABC satellite, and then to radio stations all over the country. It's incredible. Technology is just absolutely incredible. It being the first hour of our Friday program, it's Brunch with Bernie, our time for regular time for our checking in, our hour with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Our telephone number, if you'd like to call and be on the line with Congressman Sanders, is 1-866-889-8894. The chat room, by the way, you can reach at tomhartman.com. I'm actually in there, too. We were fortunate enough to get a room with two lines here out in Palm Springs, and so we're running one for the telephone system, the other for the Internet. Hey, Bernie, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
It is always wonderful to have you here. By the way, I should mention Bernie's website is bernie.house.gov, G-O-V, And if you want to find out more about what Bernie's up to today, Bernie's the only independent member of the House of Representatives. I think of him as America's congressman. Bernie, what's on your plate today? What's a lot in the news this week?
Well, there has been a lot in the news. On Wednesday night, along with the rest of Congress, I was there on the floor of the House listening to the president's speech. And I found it, to say the least, an extremely interesting speech, not only for what he said and how he said it, but for what he did not say. And I would hope that we could dialogue a little bit with some of the listeners today about some of the issues that he raised and what he said.
Yeah.
What concerns me about his remarks is, in many respects, they are Orwellian newspeak. In other words, he says something which kind of sounds right, but any kind of examination of what he says and what he doesn't say indicates that a lot of what he's saying is simply not true. All right, let me give you one example.
Sure.
Here it is, folks. I want you to think about the economy as it's going on right now for ordinary people, how regular people are doing, working people are doing, lower-income people are doing. Here is the president's remarks, and I quote, "America's economy is the fastest growing of any major industrialized nation. In the past 4 years, we have provided tax relief to every person who pays income taxes, overcome a recession, opened up new markets abroad, prosecuted corporate criminals, raised home ownership levels to the highest in history, and in the last year alone, the United States has added 2.3 million new jobs," end of quote. Now, that's pretty good, isn't it?
Well, it would seem. My jaw fell at just about every point in that. It's we need 2 million jobs a year just to keep up with population growth.
Right? Oh, gee, he forgot to say that. And he also forgot to say that in his first 4 years, he was the only president since Herbert Hoover to see a loss in jobs. Forgot to tell us that. He talked about, quote, "opened up new markets abroad." Well, that's pretty good. We're selling more products abroad. What did he forget to tell us? He forgot to tell us that our trade deficit is now at an all-time high of $600 billion, which means that while, yes, we are selling somewhat more abroad, we are importing more and more and seeing a record trade deficit, and with China alone, a trade deficit of somewhere around $140 billion, which is causing huge concerns not only in the United States, but all over the world. He talked about the fact that he has provided tax relief to every person who pays income taxes. Yeah, but about half of that tax relief went to the wealthiest 1%, and as a result of cutbacks in federal programming, we're going to see state taxes go up and local taxes go up primarily on moderate income people. And when he talks about the creation of 2.3 million new jobs, he forgot to tell us what kind of new jobs are being created. Are these jobs that pay people good wages and provide good benefits, or are they, as is the fact, mostly low-wage jobs with minimal benefits? So the point here is not just to critique what's going on in our country and the Bush administration, but to understand how they use language to distort reality.
Yeah.
Now, the president gave a speech which is 9 single-spaced pages, and he decided to focus about one paragraph of that on what I consider to be the major crisis, domestic crisis facing America, and that is health care. And he came forward and he said, and I quote, "I ask Congress to move forward on a comprehensive health care agenda," end quote. Now, that's pretty good. We surely do need a comprehensive health care agenda.
Yeah, he actually got a standing ovation on that.
It gives us the same problem as we've heard before, which will essentially do nothing to lower the escalating cost of health care, which in fact will probably only increase the number of uninsured, which is now at a record-breaking 45 million. He had not one word to say as to why the people in America pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. So what I think the genius of these guys are is they look at issues, they throw out a lot of words, comprehensive health care agenda. Wow, that's pretty good. But then if you take 5 minutes to analyze it, you say, hey, there ain't nothing there. That this guy is really speaking in defense of the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical industry. And, of course, the last and most important point is his what he did devote a lot of time was is to Social Security.
And now, I have to say, Bernie, I have a question about that. I don't recall in my lifetime, and I admit, you know, in my 53 years, I have not been an absolute heavy-duty, hardcore student of every single State of the Union address, but I certainly have seen a number of them. I don't recall a president ever having been booed in my lifetime. Do you? Yeah,
so
it sounded it's sort of like Prime Minister's question, sort of halfway between a boo and a
Of all of the other outrages, the worst. And I'll tell you why again. Tom, if a conservative, you know, right-wing people, and big corporations, of course, do not like government protecting the needs of ordinary people. They want to do what they want to do, and they want to move to China. That's fine. They want to pay less than the minimum wage. That's fine. They don't want any environmental protection. That's fine. We can understand that. Not terribly hard to understand. And I don't mind when some guy comes over, a libertarian type or a corporate type, says, look, government stinks. Let's get government out of people's lives. I don't want Medicare. I don't want Social Security. I don't want Veterans Administration. I, as a head of a large corporation, Lockheed Martin, I'm going to run the world. I can understand that, right? If you're the head of Lockheed Martin, it makes a lot of sense for you to say that. But what I don't like people, and this is exactly what the president is doing, lying about the reality of Social Security. If the president came forward and said, look, from a philosophical, exactly what the president is doing, lying about the reality of Social Security. If the president came forward and said, look, from a philosophical perspective, I think we should not have a government program called Social Security, and I, as the president of the United States, think that we should abolish it or substantially abolish it, I think it's fair enough, then we have a debate on the issue. But right. What I resent very, very strongly is when the president goes and tells younger people that Social Security is going, quote-unquote, bankrupt, that Social Security is not going to be there for them. And in his remarks, he once again absolutely twisted the facts. So let me go through it again. If you want to privatize Social Security, that's fine from a philosophical point of view. But please, Social Security is not going bankrupt. According to the Social Security Board of Trustees in its March 31st, 2004 annual report, if Congress does nothing, and I certainly hope that Congress does take action, Social Security 52, and after that, with people telling people what is not true, that Social Security is going bankrupt, I think you're going to see a lot of work on that issue.
Yeah, I think the ultimate bottom line here, Bernie, is this philosophical divide. And like you, I respect the perspective of the other side. Now, I'm willing to understand and even, you know, acknowledge and tip my hat to those folks, the libertarians, the conservatives, the, you know, whatever we want to call them, who believe that the only functions of government should be to protect the national defense. And basically that's it. And even local schools, you know, there should be no government involvement. The local fire department should be for profit. Local police departments should be vigilante squads. However far out they want to go in their philosophy, and they do have some constitutional backing in that, in fact, you know, although it's all arguable. I mean, it talks about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's pretty broad. But the bottom line is there is this bunch of people who say that any time the government gives money to anybody for anything other than the military, that that's socialism and that that's a terrible thing. And why can't they just be honest like they were in the days of Barry Goldwater and simply say, you know, we think that when Franklin Roosevelt rolled out Social Security and we think that when LBJ rolled out Medicare, these guys were advancing a socialist agenda and we don't like it. And then those of us on the other side can say, but in a democracy, whether you call it socialism or whether you call it libertarianism, it doesn't matter. If the majority of people want it, that's what you get.
Well, Tom,
you know,
the answer is that they don't do that because that's what these guys have learned. They're not honest. In other words, if they take that extreme right-wing philosophy, they will get some support, but it is a very much minority position. The vast majority of the people do believe that government should play a strong role in protecting our retirements, in protecting the disabled, in protecting survivors, which is what Social Security does. You know, if your husband drops dead and you have two kids, you don't have to sleep out on the street because you have a Social Security program. The vast majority of the people believe the government should continue Medicare and Medicaid. And, in fact, I think in many parts of the country, people do believe the government should make sure that all Americans are entitled to health care as a right of citizenship. They lose the philosophical debate. So what they have done, and that's the point of my harangue this afternoon, is that they are now into fear tactics, into dishonesty, and that really upsets me very much.
Right, and that doesn't help anybody in America, certainly doesn't help American democracy. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders, independent from Vermont, America's independent congressman. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment here on the Tom Hartman radio program, the number 1-866-889-8894. We'll be right back.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oric, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oric XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change? Parent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, live from Palm Springs, California. Bernie Sanders, Congressman Bernie Sanders is with us, I believe. And you're in Vermont today, aren't you, Bernie?
Yes, I am.
Great. And Rama Schneider running the board for us there in Montpelier. Ira Gravatt answering the phones. We are all back and live. Let's go to the telephone lines. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. On line one, Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
I guess it's good morning to you, Tom, and good afternoon, Bernie.
Good morning. Hey, Rick.
Different time zones there. Well, Bernie, I enjoy this.
Let's go to the telephone lines. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Line one, Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, welcome to the program.
I guess it's good morning to you, Tom, and good afternoon, Bernie.
Good morning. Hey, Rick.
Different time zones there. Well, Bernie, I enjoy visiting your website periodically. I guess my favorite feature on there is your newsletter.
Yep.
I was just wondering if you had time, if you could maybe let us know when the next one would be up online. But my real question
next was... Next one will be up very, very shortly, within the week, we think.
Good. I'll look for it. But I also came across in one of our branch libraries here in Grand Rapids the article you had in the magazine In These Times about Chinese trade issue. And I just wanted to run this by you. I'm pretty sure you're going to agree with me that you remember all the grief that Republicans gave Bill Clinton because he was supposedly using military secrets to China, and wasn't that treasonous? And yet, as you point out in your article there, and I don't remember every detail, but I guess it had mostly to do with the China. You're doing business with the government.
Yep. No, you're absolutely right. Now, I think, Rick, that one of the untold stories, and you have to look at it at a number of levels. And my criticism here, I should simply... Now, the Bush administration, and caution, what we're doing with China in a couple of different ways. Number one, era and clear. It's like the nose on your face of anyone who went Christmas shopping. You saw it. It is harder and harder to buy a product in a Walmart or any other store in America that is not made in China. And those numbers are growing. CEO after CEO is making it very clear, whether it's General Electric, whether it's General Motors, whether it's IBM, they are laying it right out on the line for everybody to see except the President of the United States and many members of Congress. And that is, bye-bye, the United States. Thank you for making us a great corporation. We're now off to China. And it's not just blue-collar jobs. It is not just sneakers and footwear and furniture. Increasingly, it is information technology jobs. Many IT leaders in this country predict that in 20 years, China will be the leading information technology country in the world, which means many good-paying jobs will be going over there as well. That's one huge issue. Second issue, it is no secret that a lot of the technology that American corporations like Boeing and others are bringing to China are dual use, meaning that they could be used for military matters. And China has a very expansionist foreign policy. They're going all over the world now. They're in Latin America and investing and so forth and so on. So there is a lot of concern among military people about China's military growth. Third, the point that Rick raises, with the United States having being trillions of dollars in debt, having record-breaking deficits, guess who's buying that paper? And that is China, which gives them a great deal of leverage over the what we do as a nation. They own a lot of our debt. So I think you're going to see that issue rise to a level that it deserves. Some of us are working very hard on it. The Bush administration has very little to say about it.
Yeah, it's a train wreck on its way. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Thanks, Rick, for that call. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 1-866-889-8894.
Hello?
Out of that he's not smoking. When we say not to hang out with the weed crowd,
we mean it.
That's what it takes to keep him away from marijuana.
And we love him enough to live with that.
Love, the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com for information on how to prevent your child from using marijuana. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Today marks the debut of a California-wide ad blitz targeting Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's proposed healthcare industry changes. The governor has been in a heated battle with the California Nurses Association ever since he announced changes to staffing rules. Schwarzenegger used emergency action to freeze scheduled changes in nurse staffing ratios that would have assigned fewer patients per nurse. The 60,000-member union says that the changes will be harmful to patients. The ad will debut tonight in every major California cable market during a movie about Schwarzenegger's life.
The Kansas Association of Public Employees says Democratic Governor Kathleen Sebelius is allowing illegal anti-union activities against state employees. Betty Vines heads the employee association. She says her union has filed two formal complaints with the state labor board in Kansas in an effort to halt what she calls management intimidation tactics against the union.
I think it's kind of ironic that we're willing to send people all over the world to fight for other people's rights, and yet we constantly, from national on down, see our citizens being denied rights that should come to them easily, you know, and that they have to have somebody, a union or association, to be there to fight for them daily to make sure that they aren't denied those rights.
Vines says her union won't tolerate intimidation and interference from the state when it comes to the labor rights of state workers.
As garbage workers rallied in Hamilton Township, New Jersey yesterday, their company prepared to start hiring permanent replacement workers. Workers represented by the Teamsters have been striking against Waste Management Incorporated for 22 days with no date set to resume contract negotiations. The company warned strikers last week that if they didn't accept the company's latest offer, they would face the possibility of being replaced. This week, the company began collecting job applications for permanent replacement workers. Teamsters officials say that because the strike is an unfair labor practices action, the workers are protected from being replaced. The National Labor Relations Board has not yet classified the strike. If the NLRB rules it economic, the workers could be replaced. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Alabama saw a growth spurt in union membership during 2004. Government figures show that 9.7% of Alabama workers belonged to a union in 2004, up from 8.1% in 2003. Nationally, there has been a decline in union membership from 12.9% in 2003 to 12.5% last year. Many states, especially in the South, have seen organizing decrease as plants close and jobs go overseas.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Friday, the, what is today's date? The 4th of February, 2005, the week after the President's State of the Union Address. We're with Congressman Bernie Sanders, the first hour of our Friday program, Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Sanders, the United States, America's independent congressman. And let's go back to the phone lines here, Bernie. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. John in Pennsylvania is on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, regular listener, sometimes caller. Congressman Bernie, nice to finally meet
you. Nice to talk to you.
I am a progressive independent like the both of you. And my first question, actually, is you left the Republican Party, correct?
Pardon me?
You left the Republican Party to be an independent?
No, I've never been a Democrat or a Republican.
You're thinking of Jim Jeffords. In the Senate.
So you've always been an independent?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Now, my second question is around Social Security. And what I don't like about it is the debate seems to go around a lot of half-truths and false choices. Like the one comment on the right side, which says we have $10 trillion in unpaid liabilities, like that's supposed to mean something, which really doesn't mean anything. But I don't like that kind of talk because I think it doesn't really solve anything. The thing on our side that I hear that doesn't really make full sense to me is the 40% cut in benefits. That, without context, to me, doesn't mean anything. And I'd like to know if you can explain that.
Sure. Essentially, what Bush is proposing, and we haven't seen the fine print of his plan yet, but what he's proposing is that workers put substantially less money into the Social Security fund and use them for private accounts.
if less money, Tom, is coming into the system, two things are going to happen. There will be less money out available to pay benefits for older workers, and also we're going to need to raise substantial sums of money to fill that gap, several trillion dollars. Everybody who has looked at Bush's ideas, including a commission that he himself appointed, says that there will be major in Social Security benefits for people in the system. That is, I don't think, debatable. But it is not exactly clear as how significant those cuts will be. But there have been good estimates of between 40 to 50%.
Would that be for people now, people who are like in their 55 or older range?
No,
or
what Bush is saying, and I suspect it's true, is this will not impact people who are now receiving Social Security. This will be for older for younger workers.
But isn't that somehow supposed to be offset by this privatization plan, which, by the way,
well, that's right. The theory is if you are a younger worker, you're going to be making up the difference between your private investment. The problem there is, yeah, you may, or yeah, you may not, depending on how well the stock market does.
So the plan is then a combination of private and public funds, 40% cut in private or public funds to be made up theoretically with private accounts.
That's the theory.
Yeah, and the real irony that Paul Krugman pointed out last week in the New York Times was that if the rosy economic projections of the Bush administration about how well the economy is going to do, so that people putting money into private funds will actually make more money than they would make on Social Security over their lifetime. If those rosy economic predictions were actually true, then there would be so much economic growth in wages that the Social Security system would not go broke and would need no fixes whatsoever. And I thought that was really quite remarkable. I mean, these guys actually just did the math on this thing.
Gee, Social Security is not doing well because we're predicting a relatively low growth rate. But, gee, in the same scenario, somehow private investments are going to do very, very well. Well, what are they doing? They're saying on one hand, when they calculate private investments, they have a high growth rate, and for Social Security, it's a low growth rate, and it's simply bad arithmetic.
Yeah. Yeah, very straightforward. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Mike in Florida is on the line. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, always a pleasure to talk to you. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, Mike.
Okay, listen, fellas, one thing, you know, in this Social Security debate, I think what they're trying to do is appeal to the greed factor, especially younger people, you know, building up my account rather than depending on the government. And one of the things they use is the examples of the Galveston system on their retirees and the country of Chile. And they said that those systems have been a privatized type of thing, and they've done very well. And I've heard pros and cons on that, so I was wondering if you fellows could shed any light on that, because that seems to be the, you know, when you get the Sean Hannitys,
right,
and the Rush Limbaughs, those are the systems that they're using to say this, how great this is.
Right. I don't know much about Galveston, but they also use Britain as an example. Under Thatcher, they moved toward partial privatization. And what I have read is there's great concern in Britain right now about a substantial increase in poverty among older people. I know that the Chilean program was put in under the Pinochet dictatorship, and if my memory is correct, the military, of which Pinochet was a part, chose not to apply that for themselves. I think they are also having some very serious problems.
Yeah. In fact, the Wall Street Journal yesterday, day before yesterday it must have been, did an article in which they went through Sweden and Poland, all the countries that have privatized, Sweden and Poland, Argentina and Bolivia, Singapore, Britain, and Chile. And in every single case, these programs have substantial problems way beyond anything that our Social Security program has. In the case of Argentina, it bankrupted the country. In the case of Bolivia, they had a major disaster. In the case of Chile, they're having very serious problems with it right now. And in Britain, they have to pass laws to stop all the looting of the program by the private investment folks. In Singapore, it's basically an oligarchy is running this thing, and payroll tax is now up to 33% as a result of this. I mean, it's just It's been a disaster, and every country has tried.
Is right in the sense that that is what the Bush people are trying to get across to the young people. Look, invest your money. You'll become rich. The reality is that the strength of Social Security, and we now take it for granted, is that in a world where just in the last few years, Tom, and I'm sure you know people who have been in this boat, people who had put their retirement hopes, their egg nest into the stock market, well, in the last 5 years, stock market has not been particularly good. Now, my view is, and a lot of those people have lost a good part of the retirement that they hope to receive. Right. What we sometimes take for granted and we forget about is that in the last almost 70 years, Social Security, in this crazy, volatile world that we live in today, but Social Security has paid out every benefit owed to every eligible American, and that's a pretty good record. Social Security has gone a very long way, successfully, to wipe out poverty, not completely, but in a significant degree for our older people, and it's taking care of millions of people with disabilities, survivors' benefits. It has worked, and why we want to scrap that program and go to a situation in which millions of people could end up in poverty does not make a lot of sense to me. I think what we want to do is create opportunities for people to invest outside of Social Security. If they want to take that risk, that's great. But Social Security has worked, and I do not think it makes sense to destroy that system.
Yeah, and those investment opportunities outside of Social Security already exist in the form of 401ks, SEPs, IRAs, I mean, tax-free options. Plus, you can always just take money and put it.
The government can even strengthen that. But we should not, and I think even some Republicans in Congress now understand. And Bush, by the way, is running into opposition from Republicans in Congress, that you have a system that has worked well. You talked about administrative costs associated with private retirement programs. In Social Security, the administration costs are minimal. And I think, you know, we have a system. It needs some minor adjustments, but we should not be sure.
Correspondence from a fellow that I know. I don't, he's not like a close friend, but I've known him for a couple of years, who's fairly high up in one of the investment houses in Wall Street. I'm not going to name him or the house, but it's a name you'd recognize. And he made the comment to me last week that this demographic bulge of the boomers retiring that we started planning for with regard to Social Security back in the 70s, setting aside all this extra money so we would be able to start paying out from the extra fund in 2018 all the way through 2042 or 2052. He said that demographic bulge is also going to hit Wall Street, and nobody is willing to talk about this out loud. He said what's going to happen is sometime in the next 15 or 20 years, and maybe as early as 12 years, the dynamic of Wall Street is going to change. Right now, there's all kinds of money going into Wall Street because there's all these people putting, you know, investing in Wall Street for retirement and just, you know, rich people investing and whatnot. He said, but however, once those people reach retirement, once that baby boomer generation reaches retirement, not only are they going to start taking Social Security, they're also going to start taking their money out of Wall Street. When they start taking their money out of Wall Street, that's going to reduce demand for stocks. Now, the price of stocks doesn't reflect necessarily the value of the companies. Price-earning ratios have been all over the map over the last 50 years. Instead, the price of stocks reflects the demand for stocks.
Right.
And so when there's less demand for stocks, fewer people wanting stocks, the stock market could fall right off the edge of the earth, not to mention the fact that Wall Street will lose hundreds of billions of dollars in terms of profits because people are no longer investing into Wall Street. They're pulling their money out of Wall Street, this starting around 2015. And so Wall Street, seeing this potential problem for their own profitability coming down the road, is leaning on the Bush administration saying, hey, bail us out here with a mandatory government program. Does that make sense to you?
Well, I'm not an expert on it, but what I can tell you, there was a piece in today's paper that the Business Roundtable, that is the CEOs of the largest corporations in America.
The 100 largest corporations.
Tens of millions of dollars, some $35 million into advertising to push Bush's program. So the answer is I don't know the specifics about it, but we do know that Bush's privatization scheme is certainly supported by Wall Street and big money.
Yeah, hugely. Okay, let's go back to the phone lines. Kate and Arcadia.
And then I had another comment. That not to mention when people's wages, you know, are increasingly lower and lower and lower, and the jobs available are not high-end jobs, high-paying jobs, where are people going to get the money to invest in this, you know, in this scheme? But what I was going to say, something occurred to me as you and Bernie were talking, and I think I just wanted to share it with you, about most people believing it's the government's role to protect the people. I really saw a connection there between the libertarian idea of investing only in the military, by extension, protecting belongs to the military, I mean, the government to do through the military, but protecting the people doesn't just mean protecting with arms. It means protecting with, you know, regulations and things like that all across the board. And so there is a bridge there with libertarians to talk about how, what do you mean by protecting
right.
people?
And Kate, these are the kinds of discussions that we should be having as a people. And we should be laying it out on the table. I believe that most Americans think that in a democratic, civilized society, we should not have fellow Americans sleeping out on the street. I think most Americans think that it is the responsibility of government to protect elderly people through programs like Social Security, that all Americans should have health care as a right of citizenship, that corporations and companies should not be allowed to pollute our environment so that we end up drinking filthy and toxic water, or the air that we're breathing makes us sick. I think most Americans do believe that. But what we are up against is a multi-zillion dollar assault from corporate America and the corporate media and right-wing people in government who are trouncing us every day. Government is terrible. Government is awful. Don't you really want your lives to be run by large multinational corporations? And I think when people think about it, the answer is no, but it is hard to get that kind of debate to take place.
Yeah, well said. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Kevin in Philadelphia on the line. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the program.
Gentlemen, how are you doing?
Good.
I do respect your right to disagree with the proposal, the Social Security proposal, but I think you're both being a little bit disingenuous.
Okay, how so?
Are you there, guys?
Yes, right.
Yeah. How so, Kevin?
I'm sorry. Tom, you had said one disingenuous.
Okay, how so?
Are you there, guys?
Yes, right.
Yeah. How so, Kevin?
I'm sorry. Tom, you had said one thing, and I want to take issue with. You had mentioned, I think two callers back or a segment back before the woman had called, you had stated that it's going to be a mandatory program. I've never heard anything that this would be a mandatory program for people to participate in. Number two,
Social Security in and of itself is a mandatory program. That was my point.
Your
participation
isn't mandatory. I have never heard that mentioned.
Okay, I'll give you that. You're absolutely right. Okay. My point was, though, that if you decide that you're going to go with the private investment part, then what we are doing for the first time in, as far as I know, in our history, we are saying that we are going to use the force of government. Libertarians like to refer to it as, guys showing up at your house with guns. We're going to use the force.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
In some parts of the world, a shortage of protein leads to an abundance of poaching. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. People and wildlife are suffering from severe overfishing in the waters of West Africa. Researchers say the fishery has been depleted as a result of overexploitation, and people can no longer rely on fish to get cheap protein into their diets. People are turning to animal meat as a replacement, and they're getting it by poaching in wildlife reserves. Justin Precheres is a wildlife ecologist at the University of California in Berkeley. He studied the rise and fall of fish populations off the coast of Ghana during the past 30 years. Ghana is on Africa's Atlantic coast, and people there have depended on fish for generations. Precheres says the importance of this fishery stretches from the Atlantic coast to the edge of the Sahara Desert.
It's actually when you get much further inland, in some cases even into sub-desert or desert communities, hundreds, in some cases 1,000 miles from the coast, where you realize that it's these smoked or dried fish, particularly these small sardines and anchovy-type things, that are the primary source of animal protein. And they're the cheapest. They're still, despite the cost of getting these fish transported all the way out to these villages in the middle of nowhere, they're still the cheapest source of animal protein around.
Precheres says this source of protein and economic livelihood is disappearing because of overfishing. He says people all over West Africa are now hunting in game reserves to get protein from meat. His work shows that hunting has been hard on herds of wild animals that include elephants, lions, and leopards. Precheres published his findings last November in the journal Science. He says these problems occur around the world, and we need to find new ways to give people cheap protein that doesn't come from fish or other animals in the wild. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman Radio Program Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. And, Bernie, you were speaking with Kevin from Philadelphia.
I wanted to say to Kevin, and I hope he's still on the air.
He is. He's still with us.
Okay, Kevin, we got 45 million Americans who have no health insurance in America. Not in 45 years. Today, the system is disintegrating.
Not interested in that. I'm going to talk about Social Security.
To China. But here's my point, though. If you're the president of the United States, you've got to pick your issues. With China right now, we're losing millions of decent-paying jobs. Our veterans cannot get into a VA hospital. Not in 45 years.
Understood, Bernie, but
tomorrow.
You're getting off topic here. I'm talking about Social Security.
All right,
and
I'm talking about why is the president making this a major issue when it's not a problem for the next 45 years?
That is off topic,
years.
Bernie.
Yep.
And I don't mean to be disrespectful to a man in your position, and I hope I don't come off like that, but Tom and you were both going on today about, it's so risky. It's risky to put your money in. It's risky. The stock market, oh, heaven forbid, the sky is falling. Are you both familiar with a gentleman named Dr. Jeremy Siegel? I'm not going to try to quiz you. He's a PhD from the Wharton School.
Okay.
Are we going to do dueling experts here?
Dr. Jeremy Siegel has a book called Stocks for the Long Run. The thesis of that book is that from 1925 to, I believe he wrote it in 2002, it is safer to have your money invested in equities than it is to have it in United States government bonds because of the inflation factor on bonds and things along those lines. So for it, and the average
sort
return,
of. There was an article in the Christian Science Monitor,
let
Kevin.
Let Kevin make his point.
All right.
The average of the S&P over the last 75 years is somewhere in the 9% range. So, you know, when you're talking, and yeah, I do agree, people lost their money, and there is a greed factor. But that greed factor falls upon the individual, not upon the society as a whole. So
okay.
why should I be penalized when I'm not greedy and I can keep my eye on the ball? When somebody else is greedy, they want to invest all their money in Enron or some other high-flying stock like that.
Are you, Kevin, you raised a good issue, which we don't have enough time to get into. I would say this. Number one, there are people whose calculations over a period of time would disagree with the source that you made, because among other things, you're not taking into account the administrative costs and the commissions that are involved. Second of all, of which there is no debate, Kevin, while certainly people do make money, sometimes a lot of money on the stock market, you will not disagree that people also lose a lot of money, and it has everything to do with timing, correct? Kevin? Okay.
I think Kevin's gone.
Okay, the issue here for me is that Social Security is an insurance program which has worked very, very well. I do not want to see it destroyed.
Yeah, okay. Amen. Thank you, Bernie.
Okay, timing, correct? Kevin? Okay.
I think Kevin's gone.
Okay, the issue here for me is that Social Security is an insurance program which has worked very, very well. I do not want to see it destroyed.
Yeah, okay. Amen. Thank you, Bernie.
Okay,
Congressman,
thank you.
Congressman Bernie Sanders with us today. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, and we will be back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication's...
So pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
United Airlines flight attendants and pilots accepted new contracts on Monday, while the Mechanics Union rejected their offer this weekend. In an effort to emerge from bankruptcy, the airline has been reducing wages and benefits across the board. The mechanics overwhelmingly voted down the contract offer, and more than 85% voted to authorize strike action. Richard Turk is the communications director for the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association.
Basically, the strike part of it's not going to come into play unless the judge abrogates our contract. If he abrogates our contract, we feel we have the right to strike. You can't change someone's contract and expect them to continue to work under it without having the right to self-help.
Turk says that each member has their own reason for rejecting the contract because not a single item in it wasn't concessionary.
I think the overriding issue is that most of the membership feels like enough is enough. We've taken pay cuts and we've done everything we can to help sustain United Airlines. We're willing to make United a better company, but until they change the way they do business, nothing's going to happen. They're not going to make money, even when they continue to take big cuts from us and subsidize fares with it.
The pilots agreed to an 11.8% pay cut, and the flight attendants will have their wages reduced by 9.5%. As for the mechanics, Turk says that the ball is now in the airline's court.
Montana has joined a list of red states where state employees face problems from Republicans over collective bargaining. Republicans in Montana's State House are holding up approval of a collective bargaining agreement reached between the Montana Public Employees Association and Governor Brian Schweitzer. Schweitzer is a newly elected Democratic governor. Tom Schneider, executive director of the Montana Public Employees Association, says state employees face a political stalemate forced by Republicans in Montana who control half of the state house.
Now we have a stalemated situation where at the present time we don't have a pay bill per se before the legislature because the Republicans refuse to back off of their proposal and the Democrats are sticking with what was negotiated with the governor.
Democrats control the state Senate in Montana and there's a Democratic governor as well, but the state House must also sign off on the pay raise for state workers. Schneider says state workers in Montana have the right to strike, and it would be a shame if that had to happen to enforce an agreement that the governor has already approved. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. America's harvest of shame continues when it comes to working and living conditions for farm workers. Oxfam says nearly 2 million farm workers, mostly immigrants, work like machines in the fields for poverty wages. Half of all farm worker families earn less than $10,000 a year. A tomato farm worker must pick nearly 2 tons of tomatoes to earn $50. Farm workers in the U.S. today are effectively earning 30% less than they were in 1980.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
In the depths of the Great Depression, not a single public library in America closed its doors. Banks went under, farmers went bankrupt, millions of people were out of work and out of luck, but the American public clung to its libraries, not only because of their inherent value to our society, but also because they are symbols of community strength and hope. How lame, then, to see public officials today, from George W. Bush to city council members, reaching for the budget axe to whack library funding, forcing branches to close, valuable services to be eliminated, and hours to be cut. In a time when governments dump billions of taxpayer dollars into corporate subsidies and boondoggles, our so-called leaders are failing the people by going after these true public treasures. Check out Salinas, California, a hard-hit working-class city which is now the largest population in America without a public library. Ironically, this is the hometown of John Steinbeck, the prize-winning author of The Grapes of Wrath and other powerful works that chronicle the human spirit during the Depression years. Steinbeck knew that literature has the power to elevate the spirit and help people rise above difficult times, and it's said that he got some of his early exposure to the power of literature at the Salinas Library. Since Steinbeck's day, Salinas expanded to 3 branch libraries, one named after him. But now, all 3 have been closed by the city council, which is facing large budget deficits. This move shuts out the 1,900 people a day who count on the library for books, literacy courses, internet access, after-school programs, and other services. Also, nearly 3 dozen employees have been shown the door. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is not a Salinas story, but a failure of all public leadership. Why are they dumping billions into Bush's Star Wars boondoggle, for example, while public libraries, which provide essential services that keep America informed and enlightened, are forced to go begging?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio, broadcasting live on radio stations from California and Oregon to North Carolina and West Virginia, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, beaming around the planet from WhiteRoseSociety.org. RadioPower.org in 29 states and cable systems, CableRadioNetwork.org, American FM on Live 365, all over the place. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to call into the program today. The website, TomHartman.com, if you want to drop into our live chat room, which is already well-populated, full of folks. In fact, it's scrolling off the list here. I am talking with you today live from Palm Springs, California. We're at the Winter Brain Conference and StoryCon, and here at the Hilton in Palm Springs. And I will be here also broadcasting the program on Monday from here, and then we'll be taking the red high home. We'll be back on the air from the People's Republic of Vermont on Tuesday, and I'll be presenting at the conference here over the weekend. So that's what's up on this end. Thank you very much for being back with us, for joining us here on this end of the week. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And pretty much anything you want to call about or talk about. I've got a bunch of letters and email, actually postings. We started a thread on our message board. If you go to TomHartman.com, it will get you into the message board, and you can find a number of interesting threads there. One of them in particular in the radio show is questions that you'd like to ask on the air. A lot of folks don't like to call in. They're just, you know, kind of basically bashful. But they have questions. And so we answer those on the air. We will do that today. We do it generally every Friday. So I've got a stack of those. We're going to have a guest at the bottom of the hour. And at the moment, Alfred in Wyoming, Michigan is on the line. Hey, Alfred, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Tom. I've been waiting so long. I have all these eclectic questions I'd like to shot. You probably have heard that it looks like Howard Dean's going to be the Democratic National Chairman.
Well, that's the conventional wisdom right now,
yeah.
And I think a fine thing it is, I think.
And I think this General Mattis was absolutely correct. I think he should tell the American people that what war is. As a matter of fact, I looked through some notes from a book I read recently where General Wellington, the British hero, mentioned that it was bad business to try to change governments for countries to go into countries like we did in Iraq and change things. And Tolstoy gave a good idea. He said, war should not, it's all humbug when you try to sugarcoat it, that it should be told exactly what it is, so horrible that it should only be used as a last resort.
Yeah, well, there's sort of two thoughts on that. On the one hand, you have the psychology, the mentality of the old Roman circus, the idea that, you know, let's watch people die, isn't it fun, or let's participate in it vicariously. And team sports, and particularly football, it's interesting, the psychology, the difference between football and baseball, you know, that baseball is more pastoral and football is more military, but that's a whole other discussion.
Yeah.
But the point is that
I wanted to talk to Bernie about this, and maybe you can answer this.
Yeah.
Of course, on the eve of World War II, there was only one global corporation, Coca-Cola. But what happens if somebody goes into this private and puts 4% or whatever they had? Does that mean the employer is able to deduct his money and invest it, that he's not doesn't have to contribute to Social Security?
Well, the reality is, so far, Alfred, that none of the details are out, so we just don't know.
Does that seem like General Motors, if they had a million employees and 400,000 chose to go this way, that the General Motors would be able to keep that money for themselves? And
yeah,
not
I don't know. I mean, here's a problem that I have, or a concern that I have. In the United States last year, we had 1.46 million people declare bankruptcy. More than 50% of them, 52.6% of those bankruptcies, were the result of people being wiped out by medical bills.
Mm-hmm.
Of them, three-quarters of them had insurance, had health insurance. And now, I'm wondering, and I'm very concerned about this. In many states, the bankruptcy laws have been changed, and certainly federal bankruptcy laws, they've been changing them as quickly as they can, have been changing them so that when you declare bankruptcy, they can go after your retirement funds as well. And now, if you declare bankruptcy, they can't go after your Social Security. But will they be able to go after the private retirement part of your Social Security? I don't know. This is another question that needs to be answered. As they say, the devil is in the details, and there are
so many.
Well,
that's why we're supposed to have an opposition party. I just hope they don't roll over.
Yeah, there you go. Well said, Alfred. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. And that point that Alfred raised earlier about General Mattis, I have to say, one of the unfortunate realities of human psychology is that there actually are some people who enjoy killing other people. And when it can be done in a relatively sanitary way, when it can be done in a video game fashion, when it can be done from remote distance, although some people even enjoy it close up, war provides an opportunity for those people to have a good time. And I have known a few people, not a lot, but a few people over my life who the high point of their lives was being in Vietnam and killing people and, you know, getting into these battles, getting into fights, and being able to just really and truly, for the one time in their life, let it all out, just completely let out all the anger and rage and frustration that they have by causing the death of another human being. And I think that that's what the general was expressing on television very candidly when he said it's a hell of a lot of fun to kill people. I think he was just speaking his truth, and the unfortunate truth of some small percentage of people who become professional soldiers. It provides an opportunity to do something that in any other venue would be considered a crime. But in war, under certain circumstances, certain laws, it's the old gladiator thing. We don't have gladiators that fight to the death anymore, so we have wars. And this is a tragedy of our day. I think it's a poor commentary on our society. It raises substantial questions about the neuropsychology and the pathologies associated with violence. And, in fact, interestingly, that's going to be something I'm going to be getting into in my talk this afternoon here at the Winter Brain Conference as soon as we get off the air. But this is something that we can't just sugarcoat and walk away from, as the news is trying to do. And I'm pleased that it has been brought out And it's going to be very interesting to see if this gets followed. I suspect it won't. I suspect everybody's going to drop this like a hot potato and run away from it. But the old, you know, an Arlo Guthrie, you know, I want to kill, you know, from Alice's Restaurant. That unfortunately very much is a very real part of warfare. And you see it all over the world. And I've seen it in several countries and people who are gleeful about this. And then they come home. This is the way that wars get visited on the second and third generation. It's the way that wars get visited on we the people here at home. Let's go back to the telephone lines. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. Alan in New York is on the line. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Yes, I got a question for you. Don't the wealthiest people in this country have an insurance plan for insuring their houses along the coast? I mean,
well,
a government-sponsored
yes.
one?
Yeah, I was just going to say yes and no. They have an insurance program, and you and I pay the premiums on it, yes.
So it seems kind of like it's hypocritical for them to be condemning Social Security as an insurance plan.
Well, you know, the reality is that coastal flood insurance doesn't just accrue to the benefit of very wealthy people. There has been a huge demographic shift among people who live along the coastal areas, particularly in the south in the United States over the last 50 years, to the point now where coastal property has become so valuable that it is largely very wealthy folks who are subsidized and underwritten by this kind of insurance. But it used to be poor people. And still many poor people are covered by that as well. So, you know, what we have to do as a society is decide at what level, you know, what levels of risk do we want to underwrite? And frankly, this is something that I think is best left to the state rather than the federal government, that there should be state-level decisions because they have a better sense of, you know, where is it absolutely insane to rebuild and where is it not. I was shocked when Arnold Schwarzenegger went out to that community in California that had been destroyed by a mudslide, you know, a few decades ago. This guy bought a million-dollar house for $4,000 because everybody knew the mudslide was coming again. And then Schwarzenegger comes out and says, "We'll be back," you know, and he's doing his, like, best macho routine, and it probably played very well on TV, but it just seemed to me insane. But, it's an interesting point. Alan, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. Let's get into some of these calls here, or some of these notes for the day from the message board. Mike down in Florida writes, "On yesterday's show, you mentioned briefly a poll that revealed the majority of Americans are more upset by hostages than they are reports of the dead. He says the secret's out, and it reveals a deep sickness that too many Americans possess. The dead are disregarded and put simply. One is a tragedy. Thousands are a statistic, excuse me. But the hostage, that stokes a different fire in the depths of our emotions. Why? And I had talked about this, how, for example, the hostage crisis, the hostages that were taken during the Carter administration, that were taken by the Ayatollah Khomeini, caused the downfall of Jimmy Carter. Ronald Reagan certainly would not have won that election if those hostages had been freed any time in the 2 months prior to the election. Jimmy Carter was, you know, clearly set to win, and the longer the hostage crisis dragged out, the more Reagan gained traction, which, you know, and then the whole thing of the October surprise and Bush and Casey's involvement and all that and Ollie North and whatnot, that's a whole other rant, but the point is that 44 hostages had all that impact, and yet when Reagan was president, you had the bombing in Lebanon where over 200 American soldiers died, and within a few weeks we had essentially forgotten about it because Reagan just said, okay, that's it, and we turned and ran. We just left Lebanon. We're out of here. And Mike makes an interesting point, and I made that observation. Mike takes it a step farther. He said, why is it that we viscerally react to hostages being held, our hostages being held, and yet we're less visceral in our reaction to deaths, to the story of, well, 10 guys died yesterday, 30 guys died today. And Mike says, simply put, it's about power. He said, the dead are history to be boxed up and buried, but the hostage? The hostage is on display for the rest of the world to see. And what do they see? Power, control over a life. The destiny of that hostage is in the hands of those who hold him captive. And that is great power, power for all the world to see. He said, power leaves the opposition helpless. And that, he says, my friend, is what truly stirs the emotions of those who hide behind slogans and blind pride. They see that control is lost, hence power is lost. And that truly is what disturbs them. And to those who hold power over life on either side of the fight, Mike does not have kind words for it. I thought that was an interesting take on it, and one that I hadn't considered before. It just takes a few words to frame things, to toss everything back into perspective. Here, another note from Scott, who listens to us on WINI in Carbondale, Illinois. He says, like yourself, I used to be a psychotherapist, and I'm currently a psychology teacher. Has it occurred to you that the cons are not just wrong, selfish and insensitive, but also sick? He says, think back on Adler. Now, he's talking about Alfred Adler. There's been this kind of ongoing debate in psychology for years about what is the ultimate underlying emotion or driving force for all people. Freud mentioned sexuality. Jung thought it was the collective archetypes and sort of the spiritual impulse. Alfred Adler came along, and John Bowlby talked about attachment disorders. Alfred Adler came along and said, no, it's power. It's about power. And this is really interesting. I'll share a little more from Scott's note right after the break. But Adler noted that feeling inferior derives from a striving for superiority, and he suspects that this may be the basis of it. I don't want to get too didactic, but I think it's a good point. We'll talk about it in just a moment.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Love rules.
Our son gets mad. He tries to shout.
We'll take away his cell phone, his video game.
And if we have to, we'll take away his freedom.
He's got to understand that there will be consequences for breaking our rules.
It doesn't matter that he's not smoking. When we say not to hang out with the weed crowd,
we mean it.
That's what it takes to keep him away from marijuana.
And we love him enough to live with that.
Love, the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com for information on how to prevent your child from using marijuana.
Paid for by ONDCP.
Hi, this is Tom Hartmann. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartmann program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartmann.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palisex books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
You gave him the old, stay the course, I'm your man. Why, he'll flip-flop ya. He has no strength to lead. Yes, this you feared. Why, soldiers' jobs and surplus disappeared. Gave him the old, double speak. Yes, swift votes swindled him.
Ah, he razzle-dazzled
no
us.
No one could hear the truth above the roar.
Yes, indeed.
And though your debating was a stinker, they bought it all, hook, line, and sinker. You razzle-dazzled him, and they gave you four more.
Too many OBGYNs aren't able to practice their love with women all across this country.
I hear there's rumors on the internets.
You cannot lead if you send mixed messages.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-889-8894. Just to wrap up Scott's call, or his note, very quickly. He says, he's talking about conservatives, and he says, I do fight with them, but I no longer hate them. He says, they're sick, Tom, from an illness that we also might get if we had been in their shoes, raised by the sickness that is alive at the top of society. We can get into this, I suppose, a little more later on one of these days. But Scott makes such a good point that there are dueling opinions out there, and then there are also dueling psychopathologies, shall we say. And speaking of which, Washington, D.C., the belly of the beast, it's time for Ellen Ratner, our daily report from Washington, D.C. Hey, Ellen, welcome to the program with the Talk Radio News Service there.
Hi,
what's
Tom.
Up? Hey, Ellen.
It's fascinating to me. I had that just going on your last call before I get into sort of Washington report things. A friend of mine walked out of their family at Christmas because the sister got into such a fight with them about gay marriage. She's a born again, et cetera. And I said, you know, don't get into a fight with these people. Simply look at her and say that you're very sorry, that Jesus would not want her to be so narrow, and that you every night will keep her in her prayers for being so unloving and so narrow.
Yes, just like Jesus loves you, I love you too, and I will pray for you.
That's right. Exactly.
But you have to actually mean it, Ellen. I mean, make it genuine.
Yeah, make it genuine that you really feel sorry that your sister is that narrow.
Yeah. I think that's.
Okay. Did you know how Republicans and sort of managed to get the talking points out to a lot of talk show hosts?
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I think if you monitor the talk as we sometimes do at Talkers Magazine, I think you're going to find that people are now going to start talking about Teddy Kennedy as somehow having Alzheimer's and being too old. And just watch the airwaves, Tom, because I think what you're going to find is that things are moving in that direction, that somehow I'm beginning to hear that, and that's going to be in the talking points category for these characters.
Oh, interesting. This is the new attempt by the Reich is to kill the messengers. They're going to, you know, Robert Byrd is senile, Teddy Kennedy's senile.
Yes, and you know, it's interesting because what I do on your show, I do one about 20 different shows a day, and so when I begin to hear the same themes in different shows, then I know somebody is getting the word out.
Yeah. Yeah, the Heritage Foundation has sent out their talking points, or the Republican National Committee, or Ken Melman, or whatever.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And there's also this little adventure that happened when he went to North Dakota, that there were a couple of well-known Democrats and critics of the administration that were on this list not to get tickets. Now, they say the White House press office was furious about this, and the White House had nothing to do with it, and it may be. They said it was an overzealous local person, Republican, who wanted the local Democrats not to get tickets, which is very possible. But then how is it that you allow your local Republicans to be the ones who give out the tickets?
Yeah. Well, you know, the level of partisanship in this administration has reached astounding levels.
Well,
Ellen, thanks.
Why am I blocking on his name? Jeff Gannon can get a question into the president, and he doesn't have legitimate questions, press credentials. And me, who has been covering the guy for 4 years.
Yeah, you're the real press, and you can't. I know, it's a tough one. Ellen, we're out of time, but thank you for the call. It's great to hear from you. We'll talk to you
next. Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oric, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oric XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
United Airlines flight attendants and pilots accepted new contracts on Monday, while the Mechanics Union rejected their offer this weekend. In an effort to emerge from bankruptcy, the airline has been reducing wages and benefits across the board. The mechanics overwhelmingly voted down the contract offer, and more than 85% voted to authorize strike action. Richard Turk is the communications director for the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association.
Basically, the strike part of it's not going to come into play unless the judge abrogates our contract. If he abrogates our contract, we feel we have the right to strike. You can't change someone's contract and expect them to continue to work under it without having the right to self-help.
Turk says that each member has their own reason for rejecting the contract because not a single item in it wasn't concessionary.
I think the overriding issue is that most of the membership feels like enough is enough. We've taken pay cuts and we've done everything we can to help sustain United Airlines. We're willing to make United a better company. But until they change the way they do business, nothing's going to happen. They're not going to make money, even when they continue to take pay cuts from us and subsidize fares with it.
The pilots agreed to an 11.8% pay cut, and the flight attendants will have their wages reduced by 9.5%. As for the mechanics, Turk says that the ball is now in the airline's court.
Montana has joined a list of red states where state employees face problems from Republicans over collective bargaining. Republicans in Montana's State House are holding up approval of a collective bargaining agreement reached between the Montana Public Employees Association and Governor Brian Schweitzer. Schweitzer is a newly elected Democratic governor. Tom Schneider, executive director of the Montana Public Employees Association, says state employees face a political stalemate forced by Republicans in Montana who control half of the State House.
Now we have a stalemated situation where at the present time we don't have a pay bill per se before the legislature because the Republicans refuse to back off of their proposal and the Democrats are sticking with what was negotiated with the governor.
Democrats control the state Senate in Montana and there's a Democratic governor as well, but the state House must also sign off on the pay raise for state workers. Schneider says state workers in Montana have the right to strike, and it would be a shame if that had to happen to enforce an agreement that the governor has already approved. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. America's harvest of shame continues when it comes to working and living conditions for farm workers. Oxfam says nearly 2 million farm workers, mostly immigrants, work like machines in the fields for poverty wages. Half of all farm worker families earn less than $10,000 a year. A tomato farm worker must pick nearly 2 tons of tomatoes to earn $50. Farm workers in the U.S. today are effectively earning 30% less than they were in 1980.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you live from Palm Springs, California, speaking at the Winter Brain Conference here and StoryCon. And we will also be broadcasting live from here on Monday. We'll be back in the People's Republic of Vermont on Tuesday. We're going to do our best for the rest of the news segment here in just a moment with Ernie Partridge from the Crisis Papers. Before we do that, though, we've got a couple of folks who've been patiently sitting on hold for some time. Let's wrap these calls up and find out what's on the mind of these folks. Harry in Ann Arbor, Michigan on the line. Hey, Harry, what's up?
Oh, I'm a 92-year-old retiree living on Social Security with dignity for the last 27 years.
That's marvelous, Harry.
And when I was young, I never even thought of Social Security. I even thought of a rain check, never even thought of getting old, never looked at the oldies and didn't know. That's a different kind of folks. But I was there before Social Security came in. And
yeah, at 92 you were.
Middle-aged families, up to the poor, the parents all lived with the children. And,
yeah.
And they lived with the children because the grandparents had nothing to fall back, and so they had to live with their children.
Yeah.
So George Bush is going to get the 20, 30 years old to vote down Social Security. You better start thinking, because if the 20 and 30 years are going to get married, knowing that their parents, their father-in-law and mother-in-law are going to live with them, how many kids are going to get married?
Yeah, good point, Harry. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. The Republicans are very much of the party of the past. They're trying to take us back to the robber baron era, back to the Victorian era, back to the world of Scrooge, Marley, and Bob Cratchit, back to the area of the terrified middle class. Paul in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, Tom, you mentioned the psychopathology of the right wing. In my personal experience, occasionally I post on the Yahoo News message board, where they'll have, you know, AP, Reuters, news, the news of the day, and then you leave a message and people reply.
Right.
And a lot of times the right wing replies, they'll just say something like, you know, get over it, libs, or deal with it.
Right.
And it's very, it's interesting. I'm wondering, as far as your neuro-linguistic programming, what those kind of phrases, what they relate to, perhaps.
Those are the equivalent of strutting. They are statements of power. We're in charge now, and tough luck, Charlie, is the comment essentially that they're making, Paul. And it also demonstrates the paucity of their arguments. One of the biggest challenges that we have on this program right now, and we're actually looking to hire somebody specifically just to get conservatives on the air, because we can't. They won't come on this program. They will not come on this program. With the rare exception of the Ayn Rand folks who really believe in their philosophy, the vast majority of them are just simply unwilling to come on, and it's because they don't want to talk about the real issues, because once you get into the real issues, it starts breaking down.
I think they don't know how to talk about the real issues.
Well, and that's a very real problem, and frankly, that's a problem on the left as well, too. There's a lot of people who just don't know, they don't understand their history, and hopefully we're providing them with some of that. Paul, I got to move along. Thanks for the call, though. I appreciate the comment you made. Very good comment. Ernest Partridge is the co-editor of the Crisis Papers. The website is www.crisispapers.org, one of the finest progressive internet opinion and commentary sites on the entire web. And Ernie was kind enough to actually show up here in Palm Springs, California, and hang out with us today. Ernie, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you. Great to have you. Ernie, in the Crisis Papers, on your website, in your reporting, what do you see as the big story of the last week, of this last week that's just now wrapping up? What do you, or stories?
Well, beyond this week, actually, it's the election, or the pseudo-election, or the alleged election, and the question of retrieving our franchise, which I think we've lost.
Yeah, our franchise being our vote.
Yeah, right, yes.
And in what context? Do you mean the context of the voting machines, or the Republican corruption of, like, you know, Ken Blackwell being the Rather than put words in your mouth, what?
Well,
what do you mean?
All of that too, but I think it's just, it's remarkable how, what shall I say, unfashionable it is to even raise the question of whether the vote was an honest vote, an accurate vote. I'm one of the 20%, I understand, of the population who believes that it was not. And I actually believe that Kerry very possibly got a majority of the vote, or at least a majority of the people who intended to vote.
Yeah. Well, the exit polls show that in all the districts, except the ones where they use paper ballots,
mm-hmm.
This is the most interesting thing, I think, that just came out of the study that was just released by U.S. Count Votes, .org, .us, or whatever it is that in those districts where paper ballots were counted by hand, the exit polls were 100% accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Right across the country, didn't matter what the state was, didn't matter, you know, whatever, didn't matter whether it was pro-Bush or pro-Kerry. In those areas where the ballots were counted by hand, the exit polls and the ballots were accurate. In those areas where the ballots were counted by electronic voting machines, the exit polls suddenly all drifted in the direction of John Kerry having more votes according to the exit polls and George Bush having more votes according to the machines. So I think you raise an interesting point.
This is what some people have called very cleverly the redshift.
Yes, exactly.
The redshift being the move from Kerry to Bush in the actual vote that was reported. And in, I think, all but seven states, the shift was toward sort this out. The exit polls favored Kerry, and the actual votes, as reported, were for Bush. All but seven states. The seven exceptions were all within the margin of error.
Mm-hmm.
And the cases that favored Bush were way outside of the margin of error. And most significantly in the states that were the battleground states, Pennsylvania, which Kerry won, of course, Florida, and most important, Ohio.
Yeah.
And an interesting thing, of course, you wonder, how come? Why was there this discrepancy with the exit polls, most notably in the battleground states? And this demands an answer. So the answer is, it seems like the women voted first. And that the Bush voters were reluctant.
This being the theory.
This is being the theory. Yeah. And the women voted in the morning, and they were pro-Kerry, and the men voted in the afternoon and the evening, and they were pro-Bush, and the exit polls came out in the morning. That's one theory. The other theory is that the Bush voters were reluctant to talk to the pollsters. Now, the interesting thing about this is this phenomenon, that this explanation they have, seems to apply only in the states where there is a strong redshift
mm-hmm.
away from Kerry towards Bush.
Yeah.
It didn't seem to happen, as you point out, in the states where they had paper ballots and so forth,
right.
Where the exit polls were extremely accurate. But this is only one of a number of discrepancies and problems in the voting. Exit polls is perhaps one of the most compelling, but there are others as well.
Yeah. Yeah, the other thing that I find interesting, you said it's very unfashionable to say that the vote was stolen. I would say with one exception, Ernie, and that is the state of Washington.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, of course. Right.
Tell us about the state of Washington.
Yeah, if the shoe fits. In the state of Washington, of course, untypically, the Democrat fought back and demanded that the all votes be counted, something which, unfortunately, Senator Kerry did not do, but I don't remember the governor-elect's name, but she insisted, and eventually they counted all the votes, and sure enough, she won.
And now the Republicans are
wait a minute, yes, we demand a recount.
and here's a few more votes, and there's a couple of over there. And,
yeah, right. Right.
Yeah, let's recount Washington State, but don't look behind that curtain over there in Ohio.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. There was an article by Black Commentator, a very good website, and they pointed out that over and over and over again, laws, federal laws, were openly violated, and there have been no indictments.
Yeah, yeah.
And we can go back, of course, 4 years, this so-called yuppie riot, remember, in Miami? If a mob boss is on trial, and the goons come in and upset the trial, you know, ideally they will be arrested for upsetting a legal function. Mm-hmm. Or if a mob came onto the floor of the Senate to disrupt a vote, they, of course, would be arrested. But if a group of identifiable Republican staff members stop a vote count, that, of course, is an official government function. No indictments.
Yeah.
And had that vote count continued, very possibly, Al Gore would have won the election, won the state and the election.
In fact, according to the study that was published in the Wall Street Journal, in the New York Times and the Washington Post on November 12th, 2001, Al Gore did win the state of Florida. I mean, when they actually counted the ballots, by any measure, whether you counted the intent or not. Yeah, I just went in and downloaded the articles last week and paid for them. You know, you got to pay $2.50 now to get these articles. And if the problem was, Gore only asked for the recount initially of four counties. And in that case, Gore still would have lost.
Mm-hmm.
But if you recounted the entire state, regardless of the criteria used,
mm-hmm.
and this is a quote from the New York Times, regardless of the criteria used, Gore won the state.
Yes, and specifically, the question of whether they were going to count the overvotes.
Yeah.
Now, this is a ballot in which somebody checks Al Gore and writes down on the bottom
Al Gore. Yeah.
That vote was not counted, and the law of Florida said the intent of the voter. Now, what could be a clearer intent?
Yeah.
Now, the judge who was going to rule on that, had this gone forward, a man named Terry Lewis, said he was going to count the overvotes. That alone would have done it. And, of course, we're not talking about the 90,000 votes that were voters who were thrown out.
Right, or all the votes for Pat Buchanan. But this is old history. Let's get back to what's going on right now. What do you see as coming up for next week? This is Friday. What do you see as the big news for next week?
Well, I think it's just what's happened the last couple of days. First of all, the confirmation of Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm.
And thank goodness, 36 Democrats voted against him.
Yeah, 36.
Yeah, and the honor of our country rests on those 36 people, you know, around the world. I mean, this is a blot upon our history, our reputation, that this man is now the Attorney General. I mean, he said in a memo that the president is above the law, and he's our law enforcement officer.
Chief law enforcement officer.
Yeah.
And so it's unlikely that the Attorney General will play the role of prosecuting anybody in this administration.
You're right. And you can forget about the looking into the voting irregularities. However, and here's an important point, elections are, of course, administered by the states.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some state governments, thankfully, with Democratic governors and legislatures. And they have the option of conducting criminal investigations. Whether they will do so, I don't know, but they do. That's how possibly this thing might be broken open.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
It would require, though, an administration that was friendly to that. I mean, in Ohio, for example, mm-hmm. you've got Ken Blackmun.
No, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, and that's really, Ohio and Florida are really the states where I think we've seen the largest evidence of fraud, possibly North Carolina as well. Again, a largely Republican-controlled
mm-hmm.
state.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, of course, has questions about the vote in Georgia because there's no way to know if those voting machines actually recorded anything. I mean,
right.
there's absolutely no paper trail whatsoever.
Yeah.
So.
Well, if I can toot my own horn, in the crisis papers this week, my essay is on the voting problem. I call it Shut Up, They Explain. That's the title.
Mm-hmm.
The point being, of course, that to these very credible concerns and the evidence is brought up of vote finagling and so forth, the essential answer is get over it, which isn't an answer,
yeah.
Or, shut up, give it up and so forth. None of this is a direct answer to it because there really isn't an answer.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, the e-voting machines were designed that way. You know, with secret software codes. Imagine that, secret. And no paper trail, whatever. There's no way of determining the accuracy of these machines.
Do you think that the Republicans are going to keep this alive in the news to the extent that there may be a larger national interest, or do you think that they're just going to continue with their efforts to destroy the credibility of the governor-elect of Washington State?
Well, if the Republicans are strategically smart, and unfortunately they are very strategically smart, they'll drop this.
Yeah. In Washington State.
In Washington State, right, yeah. Right. Because it is not in their interest to keep the general issue open.
Yeah, because it's opening a can of worms.
Yeah,
it's better for them probably not.
Better to keep the worms in the can.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. And with regard to the other events, do you think Social Security is DOA? Do you think Bush is going to be able to push this thing through of privatizing part of Social Security?
Here is an opportunity for the Democrats, which, again, I don't know if they're going to take it, but I can remember, and I'm sure you can too, at a time when Social Security was called the third rail of politics, and you...
Yeah, that time was right up until about 6 months ago.
Yeah, you're right, right. You suggest even a small adjustment, and you're dead politically.
Yeah.
And here's a guy that comes in with his party, that's going to essentially throw it out, and he seems to be... he seems to think that he can get away with it. And, again, it's a great opportunity for the Democrats. If they can, the problem is they need a voice. And the media is not helping them in this regard.
Yeah, well said. We're talking with Ernie Partridge. He's the co-editor of the Crisis Papers, crisispapers.org, one of the finer progressive opinion and commentary sites on the internet. And when we come back from this break, I want to ask Ernie, how it is that conservatives can call themselves conservatives. I think it's an interesting question. It's Tom Hartman. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush O, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
America's attitude toward nuclear power is worlds away from that of some other countries. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Switzerland and Japan generate nearly 40% of their electricity from nuclear reactors. And last year, China announced plans to build 30 nuclear power plants in coming years. By comparison, the United States has virtually halted nuclear construction, relying on the technology for only 20% of its electricity. Michael Corradini is a nuclear engineer at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He says many countries have turned toward nuclear energy because they have fewer resources than the United States does.
The international scene very much depends on that country's ability to get energy indigenous to its borders.
Corradini says Japan is an example. It has no energy resources such as coal or oil. Corradini says nuclear power also gives heavily populated developing countries a way to improve.
The most interesting thing are the developing nations, where they're trying to move up in economic status and standard of living. China's an example, Korea an example. And in all those cases, you see that nuclear power is really considered to be one, not the only, but one of the ways to do it.
Corradini contends that more nuclear power would help the U.S. cut its reliance on coal and natural gas, but the failure to effectively deal with nuclear waste is the main factor weighing against the technology.
If we continue to simply store it and not deal with it, it is not really addressing the thing that many people worry about, which is, if you produce waste in the form of spent fuel, are you starting to do something with it?
Japan, France, and other countries reprocess nuclear waste as a way to reduce it. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square.
Yes, democracy is coming back to the United States of America. Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We'll be getting into a few more calls, particularly in the next hour, but I want to wrap this thing up with Ernie Partridge. Ernest Partridge is the PhD, is the co-editor of the Crisis Papers, crisispapers.org. And Ernie, you made the comment when we were talking before we went on the air that you don't understand or you have an opinion about, let's say, conservatives calling themselves conservatives. What were you talking about?
Well, let's take a broad view of this. The right wing, I don't call them conservatives except in quotation marks, they have read with great benefit to themselves, Orwell on language, and they understand that it is a powerful weapon. Newt Gingrich a few years ago wrote a memo about this. You may have heard about it.
Sure, his famous word list.
Yeah, right, his GOPAC memo. And they've been very, very smart and effective about the way they use language, and the liberals, Democrats, progressives, treasure and language as a means of communication. They don't think of it as a political weapon, and it's been to their very great disadvantage.
We think it should have integrity.
Exactly.
Rather than be a tool or a weapon.
You might say they take a conservative view of language.
We do.
Yes, we do.
Exactly. Liberals and progressives do.
Yeah.
And frankly, I think a lot of classical conservatives do as well.
Yeah.
Last year I reread Barry Goldwater's No Apologies, his final autobiography.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the guy had a lot of integrity in it with regard to language, and he was quite willing to be right straightforward and stand up and say, for example, that Social Security was socialism.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
let's do away with it. You know, it's a I disagree with those beliefs, but at least back in those days, people were honest about them.
I understand that shortly before he died, Barry Goldwater told John McCain that today he would be considered to the left of the Republican Party, mainstream of the Republican
Party. It was actually several years before he died.
Yeah,
he had taken a strong position against the war on drugs for at least a decade. He was strongly against invasions of privacy. He was a strong advocate of the First and Fourth Amendments. I mean, those were classical conservative positions. And you know, what most people point to when they criticize him was his non-support of the civil rights stuff. And that was in part because he felt that It had been infiltrated by communists. That was his blind spot.
But
I don't want to praise Barry Goldwater on this program because he had there was an awful lot wrong with what he was promoting to.
We've come to bury him, not to praise
him. Well, but at least I think in retrospect we have to respect folks like Barry Goldwater and Everett Dirksen.
Oh, yeah.
And it's impossible to find conservatives these days, other than perhaps Bob Barr, that you can respect because they are so willing to just twist language around, like you said.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you being with us today, Ernie. Ernest Partridge, Ph.D., he's the co-editor of the Crisis Papers, www.crisispapers.org. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the real free speech zone.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The AFL-CIO has chosen not to endorse anyone in a race that some say will determine the future of the Democratic Party. Upon hearing the news, former Texas Congressman Martin Frost, who is depending on an endorsement from the Labor Federation, announced his intent to drop out of the race for chairman of the Democratic National Committee. Union officials say Frost didn't show enough movement to win labor support. The departure of Frost narrows the field to former Vermont Governor Howard Dean, New Democrat Network President Simon Rosenberg, former Indiana Representative Tim Romer, and political consultant Donnie Fowler. Gerald McEntee, president of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, told the Associated Press that at the AFL-CIO political meeting, some were for Frost and some were for Dean, but the committee decided that it would be best to let individual unions decide for themselves. Many see Frost dropping out as a boost for Fowler, who has tried to position himself as the anti-Dean. While the AFL-CIO has chosen not to endorse anyone, individual unions have begun announcing support for candidates. Just this week, the United Auto Workers and the United Steelworkers of America gave their nods to Howard Dean. The vote will be held in Washington, D.C. on February 12th.
As President Bush brings his Social Security privatization pitch to Midwest states today, including North and South Dakota and Nebraska, the AFL-CIO is joining other progressive groups to rally against it. AFL-CIO Midwest Representative Shelley Seberg says that draining money from Social Security into private accounts undermines Social Security while creating as much as $2 trillion in more federal debt. Seberg says not only does Bush's irresponsible scheme not strengthen Social Security, but it undermines it.
Well, the truth of the matter is, under the Bush plan, Social Security would run out of money 14 years sooner than is now expected. And so essentially, this makes Social Security funding problems even worse, not better.
France may soon see an end to its 35-hour work week. While a recent poll shows the majority of French workers don't want to work more, the parliament has begun a three-day debate on the issue. They are debating a bill that would allow workers to clock more than 35 hours a week in return for more pay. The government issued a statement that says a longer work week is important to keep the country's economy stimulated.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. This year, according to Deloitte and Touche, the top 100 global financial services firms will offshore more than $200 billion of their operating costs. TechWeb says offshoring in information tech industries is expected to grow nearly 20% each year through 2008, with the average company sending 60% of its computer application work to low-wage nations by 2009. According to a University of California Berkeley study, 14 million Americans hold jobs at risk of being outsourced. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. Or call 215-563-7110.
Credit card companies love you. Giants like Citibank, Chase Manhattan, and NBNA constantly fill our mailboxes with little love letters, wooing us to accept their cards. But, like so many love affairs, once you've signed up, the companies suddenly show an ugly, grasping, selfish side of their personality. What you learn is that credit firms seem to enjoy penalizing their customers. For example, I recently paid a monthly bill of about $1,000 on an NBNA card, but I accidentally wrote a check that was $10 short. The next month, NBNA hit me for an interest finance charge of $21. That's an interest of more than 200% on a $10 debt. Oh, they calmly explained when I called, we don't just assess the penalty on the amount you were short, but on the entire $1,000 that you owed for the month, even though you already had paid $990 of it. Check the fine print of your agreement, they said, lovingly. Perhaps you, like me, try to pay your balance in full each month to avoid such usurious interest rates. But now, they've invented a most unloving trick. Most of us assume that our bills are not due until 30 days after we get them in the mail. The banks, however, have oh so quietly shrunk this common grace period to 20 days or less. Also, Citibank and MBNA are among those that now include sneaky fine print specifying an hour that your payment is due, say 1 p.m. on the 20th. Miss it by a minute, and they can whack you with a late fee of up to $39, plus penalty interest rates as high as 30%, even though you think you paid your bill on time and in full. This is Jim Hightower saying, they stiff their own customers because it's hugely profitable. Credit card banks collected nearly $15 billion from us in penalty fees last year. To fight back, call U.S. PIRG, 212-546-9707.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Boy, so much in the news this week. It's the end of the week, by the way. Happy Friday, TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, whatever may tickle your fancy. Hope you have a wonderful weekend. We are broadcasting live here from sunny Palm Springs, California, of all places, where I'm speaking at a conference this weekend. Always nice to Always nice to have somebody give you an airplane ticket to go someplace where it's nice and warm. And I'm assuming that it's still in the 30s, low 30s, high 20s there in Vermont. I know that was what I was hearing from Rama, but it's in the 70s here. It's really very, very nice. And Louise and I went out for about a two-mile walk last night. Very, very pleasant. So I can't give you a report on Thomas Jefferson, other than to say that there were mouse tracks all over the place when we left the house yesterday for the flight out here. So let's go back to some of the, first of all, if you'd like to call in, our number 1-866-889-8894. Feel free to call in any topic you want to talk about. I want to get back to some of these questions that folks have posted on our message board. I think there's some excellent ones here. This from Tokyo, Japan, from Egg. He says on the radio the other day, he says, I listen to archive programs since I live in Japan. Tom mentioned that America has perhaps five more years before it unravels, noting that the next presidential election would be the focal point. I would be interested to hear more on exactly what recent phenomenon or events have brought him to that estimate. Usually people as discerning as Tom are reluctant to give such hard estimates, so it was both surprising and intriguing. If he talks about it, do you think he could send a message on which day? Well, today is the day. Today is the day, Egg. And hopefully you'll catch this archive. He says, I try to listen every day, but I listen at work, so sometimes I miss days. Thanks. And here's the reason why I say 5 years. And frankly, I put that forth. I put the 5 years forward as an optimistic estimate. And that is because we are reaching a series, a confluence, a convergence of factors that have, whenever we have reached similar levels, similar types of factors in the past in the United States, have spelled national crises. We have a trade deficit, which is absolutely massive, roughly $600 billion a year. We are borrowing from countries who are potential enemies of ours. The Communist People's Republic of China, which is now competing with us for oil. We've got Chavez down in Venezuela saying that he's going to sell off his American assets, his American oil refineries. Why? He owns portions, chunks of either five or eight oil refineries in the United States, and they're ideally suited for the heavy crude that comes out of Venezuela. Why would he sell them off when those refineries are the ones that most efficiently and profitably can produce the exact kind of oil that he's producing down in Venezuela? Well, the reason why is because he's in negotiations with the Colombians, the Panamanians, and whatnot, to reverse the pipeline that flows across the southern part of the arc of the Central American Peninsula, to flow oil not from Central America to the east, but to the west, so that they can start loading tankers to take it to China. And he's cutting deals with China. Now, a significant chunk of our oil, I believe it's about 15% of our oil imports, come from Venezuela. But Chavez is very upset because, according to him, the Bush administration funded a coup to overthrow him by the rich and powerful interests of Venezuela a few years ago. And he's just, you know, plain old flat out not happy with that. And he is making his displeasure quite explicit. So we have that. We've got we have the Arab world talking about going to the golden riyad, to get to a stable currency. In Islam, of course, charging interest is against the law to begin with. So there's this collision of those. I mean, these aren't the big historic factors, but they're the ones that are on the sides of it. The big historic factors, number one, we're running out of fuel. We're near the Hubbert peak, if we haven't already passed it. That is the halfway point in the oil supply. But that doesn't mean that we have half of the world's oil left and available to us, because what happens is as oil wells get down and down and down, you have to suck harder and harder on the straw to get that oil to come up. And it becomes more and more expensive to get the oil up. So these oil prices that we're seeing, they're not going to be going down anytime soon. And in fact, it wouldn't surprise me within 5 years to see oil at $100 or $150 a barrel. Traditionally, when empires, when nations that go beyond their own boundaries and try to control the fate of other nations, and we have military bases in 120 countries now, traditionally when empires have lost their primary fuel sources, they have collapsed in very, very tragic fashions. And this is certainly what happened to the Roman Empire. They ran out of wood. It's what happened to the Greeks. They ran out of wood. Some argue we could get into a esoteric discussion about the British Empire, but the point is that this is a major crisis we're facing. Our trade deficits, I already mentioned, our internal debt. We have gone from when Ronald Reagan came into office being the wealthiest nation in the world, loaning more money to more countries in the world than any other nation. More people owed us money than anybody in the world, a major exporter of finished goods, a strong domestic manufacturing base. And Reagan flipped on the Reaganomics switch, the conservative economics switch. And we have now had 25 years of conservative economics, and they have succeeded in hollowing out the core of America's middle class, in exporting our jobs to cheap labor nations, in doing away with the protections that have historically been in place to protect the middle class from both what you might call unconstrained competition. Competition sounds like a good word, and in many ways competition is a good thing, but there are limits. When the big fish eat everybody and there's nobody left but big fish, you don't really have competition anymore, and we're very much approaching that point, this concentration of enormous wealth at the top. And so conservative economics have thrown us horribly, horribly into debt. And we're seeing levels of national debt. We're seeing a bubble in the housing market. We're seeing P.E. ratios in the stock market and other indicators in the stock market that are so reminiscent of the 1920s, the Roaring Twenties, and so reminiscent of what happened just before the depression of the 1850s, which led to the Civil War, and the depression of the 1760s, 1770s, which led to the American Revolutionary War, that I have some very real concerns, and if these are not rectified very quickly, I suspect that we're going to be looking at some very, I mean, we already are looking at very difficult times. I have a feeling they're going to get a whole lot worse. Let's take a couple phone calls here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Paul in Detroit, Michigan on the line. Hey, Paul, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. I just wanted to mention from today's Los Angeles Times, the newspaper has a really extensive report on Sunday's Super Bowl halftime sponsor, who is AmeriQuest Capital Corporation. It's a home mortgage lender.
Yes.
And the detailed report entitled Workers Say Lender Ran Boiler Room, in this big article, Los Angeles Times.
I read it over breakfast this morning.
AmeriQuest threatened and forced employees across the United States to falsify documents, use bait-and-switch tactics, deceiving borrowers, forging documents, fabricating borrowers' income, and falsifying appraisals.
Yeah, they also go on to point out how aggressively this corporation has supported the Republican Party and George W. Bush. I'm assuming you read that part of the article.
Yeah, yes. I have to summarize it in just a few words, you know, so I can't ramble on. But
yeah.
That's our sponsor for this year's Super Bowl halftime show, a fraudulent company that loves fraud.
Yeah, and these are the kind of folks that we want to give Social Security money to. I mean, not specifically AmeriQuest because they're not an investment firm, but basically the for-profit industry. And we just, once again, America is going to have to learn the lesson, and probably painfully and tragically, that it's a wonderful thing to have for-profit businesses in a government, in an economy, because they are the engine of economic growth. But it is not a wonderful thing when they become so powerful, as Teddy Roosevelt pointed out, that they reach up and try to seize control of the levers of governance, and that they turn government on itself and in upon itself, so that it becomes the honeypot that feeds them.
Yes,
and that's what has happened.
And also, evidently, if all these people that have been affected by this frauds are having to go to our court system to correct the wrong. Our federal
yes.
government does nothing to protect us in regards to predatory lenders like this.
Yeah, well, and in fact, that was the main focus of the article in the LA
right.
Times this morning, was that the only recourse people have is the courts, and that's, of course, one of the recourses that the Bush administration wants to take away from average people. They want to leave intact all court protections for large multinational corporations for the extreme wealthy in America. But if you're middle class or if you're the working poor and you get screwed by one of these companies, good luck, you're on your own.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for the call, Paul. Good to hear from you. And no way around it. That's their position. Mike in Florida is on the line. Hey, Mike, what's up? I think. Is Mike on line 3 here, Rama? Maybe not.
You there?
Mike, he should. Yeah. Hey, Mike. You gotta listen to the phone, not the radio.
I have the radio
there.
On right now.
Okay. Yeah. Turn it off because there's a 5 second delay.
Well, it's not on.
What's up?
I wanted to make a few points about Social Security, but first I wanted to talk about something yesterday. John in Shreveport called in. He calls in often. I know he's probably listening. He was playing games again with Rama and questioning if Rama was glad that Saddam Hussein was out of power. And we know what kind of games these are, and it's a ruse. The question I have for him is he glad that Muhammad Atta and Hamza Amagdi are no longer on this earth either? You know, the hijackers.
Yeah.
And the point being that, you know, the ends justify the means type of stuff. You know, he's playing like this is an event in and of itself and that there are no consequences from Saddam.
Well, you know, there's an easier answer to that, or an easier question to answer that question, and that is, you know, do you think it's worth $200 billion of American treasure, 1,400 American lives, 10,000 Americans lost their limbs, 100,000 Americans psychologically wounded, 100,000 dead Iraqis, civilians, and noncombatants, to get Saddam Hussein out of power?
Is it worth it? That's my point I'm trying to make, which is that he's trying to say that the event is only the only thing that happened. But it has consequences. There's a butterfly effect, and we don't even know what's going to happen from there.
No. Hosni Mubarak was right. Before the war, he said, if you go into Iraq, you're going to create 100 bin Ladens.
Right.
And history has proven him right. George Bush says, you know, we're going to fight the terrorists there so that we don't have to fight them here. And those people had the terrorists that we're fighting in Iraq, by and large, are local Iraqi citizens. They had no intention of ever coming here. They have no desire to come here. Although the longer we stay here, the more they may be inclined to. But the bottom line is that it's just another soundbite. I hate using the word lie. It's just another soundbite deception by George W. Bush to justify essentially an insane foreign policy that helps him get reelected. This is Karl Rove's big idea 2 years ago. He, as a war president, nobody can beat him. Helps him get reelected and vastly enriches his good buddies at Halliburton and other companies. And it's just enough. It's enough. We've had enough of it. Mike, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour. You're in the Truth Zone.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush Show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews.
What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
Hank Montenegro of Morganville, New Jersey wrote, "Dear Mr. Oric, ever since we purchased your 8-pound Oric XL vacuum, my wife has been in heaven. Recently, she panicked, believing she'd broken the vacuum. I contacted your customer service department, and after a few questions, I was sent a replacement part at no charge. The machine is as good as new. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yes. Are we living in the last days of the American Empire, or is it has the wonder and extraordinary opportunity, which has always been represented by the American spirit, the American dream, American ingenuity and imagination, just beginning, just really beginning to have the positive and powerful and transformational impact around the world that it has the potential to do? And this is what hangs in the balance right now. We could be developing, for example, with alternative energy technologies, we could be developing such extraordinary transformational energies, products, systems, that not only would fuel entire new industries in the United States, could change the face of the world for the better, reduce greenhouse gases and global emissions, just absolutely extraordinary, wonderful things that could be happening. Or we can simply keep turning things over to the oil companies or the Bush's oil bill and the nuclear industry and the tired old ways of the past that the Republican Party is so wedded to, taking us back to the McKinley era, taking us back to the robber barons and the Victorian era. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And by the way, the choice is ours. It's yours and mine. We make it at the ballot box to the extent that we can ensure the integrity of our ballot boxes. That has to be step one. Get in touch with your elected representatives and say, I want to know that my vote is actually recorded and counted correctly. I want a voter verified paper ballot when I vote. Even if it's generated by a machine, I want to be able to see it. And I want it to there for a recount. I want recount rules that make sense and that can be triggered if there's any good question. Anyhow, Rich in Chicago is on the line. Hey, Rich, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up, Rick?
There you go. Hey, real fast, I was watching C-SPAN yesterday, and there was a Senate committee hearing about the president in response to the president's comments on Social Security or the changes.
Yes.
And the general accounting and the budgeting, the two guys who were in charge of that, they were talking to the Senate. And frankly, I was surprised how honest they were about this. They said that the reason that the president wants to fix this issue is because of all the problems that we have, paraphrasing, this is the simplest issue to fix. The other problems we have, you know, the drug benefit program, $8 trillion over time. Our deficit is $43 trillion. So they said all our problems are actually this means nothing in the scheme of things. But if you think about it, it's pretty brilliant. If you only pick the one problem that actually might be the easiest problem to fix, the other problems, they said, if we don't work on it, this actually means nothing.
Yes, and
I mean,
it's true.
What's the deal in the long run here, then? If we're trying to use scare tactics to work on Social Security, when it turns out that really is the smallest problem that we have.
It's not just the smallest problem. At the moment, it's not even a problem.
Well, exactly.
I mean, it's just not even a problem.
True.
I mean, if we have the kind of economic growth.
Okay,
thanks a lot, Rich. I appreciate it. If we have the kind of economic growth that Bush is projecting we are going to have so that his personal accounts can generate the kind of revenue that he says that they're going to generate so that people will actually show a profit on them even after you take out the Wall Street fees and all that. If we have that kind of economic growth in the United States, then there is nothing wrong with Social Security at all forever. Because there would be so much growth that there would be so many more payroll, you know, so many more wages earned, that there would be so much more money from payroll taxes that there would be no deficiencies in the Social Security fund. Do you feel like you've slid down a rabbit hole? Is it starting to feel a little bit like, you know, where's the Cheshire Cat? In the last 4 years, his name was Dick Cheney. And these 4 years, I'm not sure who the big champion of social, maybe Stephen Moore in the Club for Growth, which raises the other question that I have. I see all these guys on TV going, oh, Howard Dean, he's going to head the DNC. Oh, boy, is that going to be a disaster for the Democrats. Why is it all of a sudden the Republicans are saying, don't pick Dean? It's sort of like, you know, please don't pick Dean. Please don't do that. Why did they spend $1 million in Iowa during the primaries? Why did Republicans, why did Steve Moore and the Club for Growth come into Iowa and spend $1 million attacking Howard Dean when Dean was running against Kerry and Gephardt in the Iowa primaries? It's because they understand that he represents the real threat to the Republicans. Stay tuned.
Love guides.
My daughter has a million things going on in her daily life, from softball to band to voice lessons. My husband and I like to make sure she doesn't spend her idle time idle, because an idle mind is a playground for trouble. You see, occupying our daughter's free time and keeping her active makes us feel confident that she won't be hanging out with the wrong crowds.
Love, the anti-drug. Call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com for information on how to prevent your child from using marijuana.
Paid for by ONDCP.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The AFL-CIO has chosen not to endorse anyone in a race that some say will determine the future of the Democratic Party. Upon hearing the news, former Texas Congressman Martin Frost, who is depending on an endorsement from the Labor Federation, announced his intent to drop out of the race for chairman of the Democratic National Committee. Union officials say Frost didn't show enough movement to win labor support. The departure of Frost narrows the field to former Vermont Governor Howard Dean, new Democrat Network President Simon Rosenberg, former Indiana Representative Tim Romer, and political consultant Donnie Fowler. Gerald McEntee, president of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, told the Associated Press that at the AFL-CIO political meeting, some were for Frost and some were for Dean, but the committee decided that it would be best to let individual unions decide for themselves. Many see Frost dropping out as a boost for Fowler, who has tried to position himself as the anti-Dean. While the AFL-CIO has chosen not to endorse anyone, individual unions have begun announcing support for candidates. Just this week, the United Auto Workers and the United Steelworkers of America gave their nods to Howard Dean. The vote will be held in Washington, D.C. on February 12th.
As President Bush brings his Social Security privatization pitch to Midwest states today, including North and South Dakota and Nebraska, the AFL-CIO is joining other progressive groups to rally against it. AFL-CIO Midwest Representative Shelley Zeeberg says that draining money from Social Security into private accounts undermines Social Security while creating as much as $2 trillion in more federal debt. Zeeberg says not only does Bush's irresponsible scheme not strengthen Social Security, but it undermines it.
Well, the truth of the matter is, under the Bush plan, Social Security would run out of money 14 years sooner than is now expected. And so essentially, this makes Social Security funding problems even worse, not better.
France may soon see an end to its 35-hour work week. While a recent poll shows the majority of French workers don't want to work more, the parliament has begun a 3-day debate on the issue. They are debating a bill that would allow workers to clock more than 35 hours a week in return for more pay. The government issued a statement that says a longer work week is important to keep the country's economy stimulated.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. This year, according to Deloitte and Touche, the top 100 global financial services firms will offshore more than $200 billion of their operating costs. TechWeb says offshoring in information tech industries is expected to grow nearly 20% each year through 2008, with the average company sending 60% of its computer application work to low-wage nations by 2009. According to a University of California, Berkeley study, 14 million Americans hold jobs at risk of being outsourced. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
The Emperor's New Hump. The Emperor's New Hump. The New York Times, this is from Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, fair.org. The up at the top of buzzflash.com right now. But you got just go to fair.org and you can find it. An article by David Lindoff, this extra. The Emperor's New Hump. The New York Times killed a story that could have changed the election. Why, the story being that George W. Bush cheated during the debates by wearing an electronic listening device so that he could be getting cues in his ear about how to respond to John Kerry. And it was pretty obvious to most of us who were watching, you know, at that one point where he kind of looked off into space and said, don't interrupt me, or as I was saying, or something to that effect. I think he said, don't interrupt me. And nobody had interrupted him. In the audience. Nobody interrupted him there. But somebody in his ear had apparently interrupted him. He was talking to his minder. And the photos all over the place, all over the Internet. Keith Olbermann showed them on TV. They were in various places. They never really broke through, though. It turns out, apparently, according to Fairness and Accuracy in Media, that the New York Times did a fairly thorough investigative report on this. Even Bob Woodward looked into it. They did the analysis. Salon published an article about it, an excellent article. And as Extra went to press, New York Times public editor Daniel Okrent posted a message on his website. This was December 21st, 04, confirming that his paper, the New York Times, had, in fact, killed a story about the device under George W. Bush's suit. Now, why did the Times kill a story that could have changed an election? Apparently, because the New York Times was concerned that running such a story would change an election. Let that sink in. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number, by the way. You can find this at buzzflash.com or fair.org. It's remarkable stuff, as they say. Did you see this in the paper? This an AP story, Associated Press, by Michael Gourmet. Marsh & McLellan is a big insurance company, and they do business in New York City, and so Elliot Spitzer was able to walk in and say, ahem, guys, I have some jurisdiction here. I'm the Attorney General. They will pay $850 million in restitution. Now, I'd just like you to think for a minute about all the folks who have stuck up 7-Elevens or embezzled, you know, $500 or $1,000 from their employers who are sitting in prisons right now all across the United States. Human beings who have committed crimes of theft. And here we have a non-human entity, a robot, a corporation. Marsh & McLennan Companies, Inc. will provide restitution over 4 years to recipients. Well, I'm sure that the guy who stuck up the 7-Eleven would love to pay back the $50. Actually, Marsha McLennan is going to give $130 million back to customers in California, $94 million to New York clients, $58 million in Pennsylvania, $55 million in Texas. See, the problem of most criminals is they just think too small. You steal $100, you steal $500, you steal a few $1,000s, they throw you in jail. You steal a few million and you do it as a corporation. And you get caught. You just have to pay it back. And maybe even not all of it. Marsh McLennan, which is based in New York, has also issued an apology calling his conduct unlawful and shameful. Yes, if you commit a crime, all you have to do is just go into court and say, I'm sorry, it was unlawful, it was shameful. And here's the money back. And no problem. In fact, your CEO can still continue to take a multi-million dollar salary. Chief Executive Officer Michael G. Sharansky said the cost is significant, but if it can help the healing process, then it is an investment. No doubt a tax-deductible one. That in the end will be well worth it and make us a much better company. Marsh shares rose $1.41, or 4.5%. Yes, they got caught in a crime. They got caught stealing from people. They're going to pay back some of the money they stole, at least what they got caught on, and they get rewarded. Their shares go up. The suit also implicated American International Group and several other major insurance companies. Spitzer argued in his civil suit, I'm reading from an article by Michael Gormley in the Associated Press, Spitzer argued in his civil suit that Marsh collected $800 million in so-called contingent commissions in 2003 alone. This is the ripoff, these so-called contingent $800 million. They're paying back $130 million in California, $94 million in New York, $58 million in Pennsylvania, $55 million in Texas. That does not, in my book, add up to $800 million. And Spitzer goes on to say the practices go back to at least the 1990s. George W. Bush in his speech saying, yes, we caught some corporate criminals. Well, Elliot Spitzer may have made a few dents. I don't see George W. Bush doing much. And then, the thing that really ground me the most about that speech, he said, we're going to stop frivolous asbestos lawsuits. Excuse me? People get from asbestos mesothelioma, which is one of the most aggressive, rapid-acting, horrible forms of cancer. People essentially suffocate to death with it. And they have the right to sue for their medical expenses to be covered and for their pain and suffering. And Bush says that's frivolous. Could it have something to do with the fact that one of the largest companies in the United States that is the most threatened by asbestos litigation, because they bought a company, Dresser Industries, they bought a company that had been knowingly exposing workers and consumers to asbestos for decades without appropriate protections, that this company, Halliburton, is facing hundreds of billions of dollars in liabilities. It could seriously harm their profitability, at least for a one-year period, if these lawsuits are allowed to continue. And Bush said that, and Cheney was sitting back there. You could see the camera shot. It went right past Bush's face, and there's Cheney sitting in the back, and he just smiled like a Cheshire cat. As Bush said, we're going to stop these frivolous asbestos lawsuits. I have to tell you, I wanted to puke. I'm sorry to sound so upset about this. My father has mesothelioma from asbestos that he was exposed to in the workplace. And that was the pits for George W. Bush to say that. That was at that level. I mean, that was when the mask, any pretense in my mind of friendly, compassion, understand, just was ripped off. And what we saw was a man absolutely lacking in understanding or compassion for the average person, or for people in crisis. That, in my opinion, is at the very least a psychopathology, a mental illness, at the very most, evil. And this is a very strong language to use about an American politician, but I don't. These are words that I feel are absolutely honest. Frivolous asbestos lawsuits. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Armin in Sarasota, Florida. I'm sure you have thoughts on this, Armin.
Oh, do I have thoughts.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I could go on and on, but I won't do it over the radio, what I really truly think of the weasel in the White House.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you restraining yourself. Rama does have his finger on the button that will knock the 5-second delay off if you get too carried away, but it's better that you not. So, what's on your mind, Armin?
I want to make a point. One of the best said stories about the stock market that's left out by the corporate media is after the 29 crash, it took almost 25 years for the market to even come back to pre-crash levels. And
right.
Think about that. That's 1954, from 29 to 54. And in between there, look at the outrageous amount of debt. Well, I would say outrageous amount of debt that it took to accumulate through our system of government spending between 29 and 54 for, you know, World War II and all these other things. And it still took into the 50s before it started coming back to where I guess the thieves that controlled the market back then, you know, just didn't have enough time to keep stealing it and keeping it from coming back or whatever, the money going into it or whatever and inflating it back up. And I think that is a critical point that people need to understand, and I can't tell you this. This is another point. I used to watch CNBC all the time, and I can't tell you how many times I heard people come on there that were educated people, PhDs, I believe, if I'm correct, that made the point that the market, 10% of the money at any given time, if it would run for the hills, you know, the exit quick in the stock
right.
market.
It would take fragile. The whole thing down.
It would take the 50% decline almost immediately.
Yeah, so, well, and that's, yeah, absolutely. And in fact, to just add to what you're saying, Armin, I have to toss this in. The point that I was going to make at the end of the first hour, but Bernie wanted to be, you know, he wanted to answer the guest, but the point that I wanted to make was that the Christian Science Monitor ran a fascinating article, which I shared with our listeners on this program some 3 weeks ago or so, where a fellow who had retired about 3 years ago, who had been in the workplace for 40-some-odd years, retired in his 60s, went back to the first year he started working, which was whenever it was, late 30s, early 40s, and added up all of the money that he had paid into Social Security. And then he looked at the stock market on a year-by-year basis. I mean, this guy must have been, you know, a CPA in another lifetime or something. And or maybe in his own lifetime, he's one of these, you know, very number cruncher. He went back and looked on a year by year basis at what the standard at what the Dow 500 average was, or maybe used the S&P. And he said if he had invested all of that money that went into Social Security into the market throughout all those years, when he retired in 2003, he would have been behind if he had put his money in the stock market as opposed to the money that he got from Social Security. And that doesn't take into factor two other things. One being that assumes that there are absolutely no fees, no management fees. I mean, that's just looking at the indexes, number one. So he would have been terribly behind. And this, of course, was because when he retired in 2003, the market was down somewhat. Hey, number one, and that doesn't take into account the fees. And number two, it doesn't take into account the fact that if you live only 4 or 5 years after you retire, then you can use up that, you know, your personal savings account. Hey, not bad. But if you live 20 years after you retire, how long is that going to last? Well, Social Security pays as long as you're alive. If it's your own private account, you're going to have to bet, you're going to have to hope that you only live as long as the actuarials say you're going to live, that, you know, it's 74 or whatever, you kick off. I mean, it's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. Armin, thanks for making the point. I got to move along. I appreciate the call. It's always wonderful to hear from you. I do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Peter in New York is on the line. Hey, Peter, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
I'm great. What's up?
I've Sorry to hear about your father, by the way.
Thank you. Keep him in your prayers. What's up?
Will do. Wanted to ask you a couple things. I'm an advocate for reforming the drug laws. It's something you don't really hear very many people talk about much lately, just because there's so much else going on.
Yeah. And yet, about half of the people in prison right now are there because of these insane drug laws.
Yeah, and it's continuing. It's not slowing down like most people think they
no,
are.
No, it's a huge growth
just
industry.
Just last year, 700,000 people thrown in jail for breaking the marijuana laws.
Yeah, it's a huge growth industry, and you've got huge constituencies that are driving this. You've got the drug testing industry, which has become a billion-dollar industry. You've got the private prison industry, which is a huge lobbying group in Washington, D.C. now. And of course, you've got law enforcement. I mean, if you were to do away with these, if you were to make this medical issue a medical issue again and sentence people to health clinics instead of prisons, there would be a whole bunch of industries that would have to be figuring out something more productive to do in society than simply locking people up and destroying their lives.
Yeah, I've even also read that, definitely all those industries, but the stock market as well would have some significant problems with the loss of all that laundered money. Well, that's in another case, I think, than what you were describing.
Well, that's an important point. I mean, in Holland, when they essentially decriminalized pot some 15, 20 years ago, it put organized crime out of business, in that at least at that part of the business. And in England, when they decriminalized heroin and said that if you're a heroin addict, you simply go to the clinic, not only did they see a decrease in the number of heroin addicts, and over time they've seen a continuing decrease in the percentage of people who are experimenting with heroin, but they also, again, saw the end of organized crime's involvement in it, which is why the decrease happened. There's no longer people out there selling the stuff because there's no money to be made in it. You can go to a clinic and get it for nothing.
Exactly.
You know, for 10 cents a dose or whatever, but you got to demonstrate that you're actually an addict. But it's who wants to be an addict, and who wants to have to show up at the clinic? It's just not cool.
No, it's not. I could go on for hours on the arguments one could make. It's a very big topic.
Yeah, it is.
Researching some history, and it's.
But we've got to wrap it up, Peter. You got about 10 seconds.
All right, I was just wondering if you could, I guess you don't really have time. I'll try and get you another time. Maybe you can help me with some history about the UN conventions at The Hague and what went on
there. Oh, yeah,
that
is a big topic.
Yeah.
We'll take that another time. Peter, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. We do take breaks, just for those who are regular listeners, at 20 after the hour, 29 after, and 50 after the hour. This is the 50 after the hour.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
America.
America's most famous naturalist compromised his broad view of wilderness to obtain a narrow set of goals, according to a Kansas historian. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. John Muir has been called a wilderness prophet, but historian Donald Worster says the naturalist's fight to save places like Yosemite diverted his passion for all wilderness into protecting select natural wonders.
It narrowed and focused on the national parks as the place to go find nature, and particularly the greatest, most beautiful places like the Grand Canyon, Yosemite, Yellowstone. Increasingly, those became, for him, nature. And what lay outside those places was less and less interesting to him.
Worster is an environmental historian at the University of Kansas. He says rich, influential friends, people like Teddy Roosevelt and railroad tycoon Edward Harriman, helped Muir save Yosemite, but he says they also compromised the Scottish immigrants' ideals.
In a way, he became compromised by the wonderful linen sheets that he liked to sleep on in these people's houses, the little boutonniere they brought him in the morning. He became their kind of pet. And they would trot John Muir out and say, "Now tell us some wonderful stories about dogs and birds in your Scottish brogue." And he would light up and do what he was supposed to do.
Muir eventually helped create the National Park Service and founded the Sierra Club. But Worster says Muir seemed blind to the world outside the parks.
He would rail against greedy people trying to destroy Yosemite National Park. But he'd really connect that up to the economic system, and it was driving environmental change, much of it very destructive, across the entire continent.
In spite of his shortcomings, Muir's legacy is seen by millions of people who visit the national parks each year. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square.
As democracy is coming to the USA, it's still possible. It's still possible. We can do it. We can pull it out. If we can wake up enough people fast enough to this absolute devastation of civil rights in the United States and the Electrode Al and his taking over our rights and the corporate takeover. If we can wake up enough people fast enough, there's still a possibility. 1-866-889-8894 telephone number. Ann in Sarasota, Florida, on the line. Hey, Ann, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Well, we need to wake up the people very quickly about what this so-called Social Security changes, these private accounts. And this really caught my eye. I mean, I've been reading stuff. I think they're deliberately made it as complicated as they can to try to pull the wool over enough people's eyes. But MSNBC posted a Washington Post story.
You're talking about the one that said that basically it's a government loan, the 3% cap. They're going to take back the profits over the market, that
right.
kind of thing. Yeah.
I
was going to talk about that.
Is where it said that if you put $1,000 a year away for 40 years, and you have just a modest growth, which you would expect to have in these kind of accounts, that you would be lucky to get $21,000, and the government would take the rest.
That's right. It's now part of the problem. You know, I read that article, and I faced two challenges in putting it on the air because it was almost going to be one of the major things I was going to rant about in the second hour today. Because I have it all marked up, in fact, in my folder here. But the first is that Bush has not released the specifics of his program. And so a rebuttal from the other side would be, well, we haven't actually said that this is the case. Now, the article says that this is, you know, inside information from inside the Republican Party and that it's pretty solid and you got the Washington Post behind it and all this. But still, they're saying that we don't know yet. So I think there's still time to point it out. And secondly, the problem is, like you said, it's so convoluted. They have these layers of complexity. Well, if you make your investment and if the investment outperforms the market, then the government can actually keep a portion of that over 3%. So your maximum profit is capped. Your losses are not minimized. There's not, you know, if it drops 6%, they're not going to make that up. And so it's just, it's, but the problem is, How do you present this to somebody? I mean, it took the Washington Post the better part of a page and a half to present it. How do you present this to somebody in a way that they can explain it to a friend of theirs around the water cooler in three sentences? I haven't figured that out. Have you, Ann?
No, but basically what I take away from this is that the ones that are going to make the money is the people handling funds, so Wall Street, who happen to
get
big money to Bush's campaign. Yep. Number two, no matter how you slice it, it looks like the average worker is going to take a big cut in their Social Security when they turn retirement age. Just no way around it. You're going to get cut.
Yeah, and unless taxes are raised, unless the cap is removed so that millionaires and billionaires pay the same Social Security tax as people making $90,000 or less. And Bush is absolutely committed to protecting the interests of millionaires and billionaires so that that won't happen. That's the one easy solution to the whole problem, and he won't do it.
Right, but I think everybody needs to let their congressman know, whether it's Republican or Democrat congressman, that there's no way they want to see this, anything tampered with, anything like this, with Social Security. Bush didn't run on Social Security. He was running on keeping us safe from terrorists. That was his big theme. He barely mentioned Social Security.
Absolutely right, Ann. Absolutely right. And you couldn't have said it better, and thank you so much for saying it so well. You must, everybody listening to this radio, the sound of my voice, contact your elected representatives right now and tell them, no, don't mess with Social Security. Remove the cap, fund it. It's enough. We'll see you on Monday. Happy weekend.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Vivilnik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the